Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
I'm better looking, I have better hair, I'm deceivingly smart, and I want everyone else to do what I say.
What do you do?
I'm a communicator.
It must be a new kind of thing.
I want to thank Brian Noonan for going on.
Holy s***! Brian's back!
Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio, 720 WGN. Oh, my goodness, we are here till 5 in the a.m. I don't know why I said 5 in the a.m. Nobody talks like that except Jive Radio guys. But it's we're here till 5 in the morning. Sam Martino is producing, the hardest working man in show business. So if you call in at 312-981-7200, which we hope you will do, because the show is always more fun when you're involved, be nice to Sam, because if you're nice to him, you get to me. So that's the phone number. That is also the text line. If you want to text, use that number. We read them. Sometimes we read them on the air. Sometimes we just curse your name, because we do have your number. And we're keeping track of those numbers. But anyway, that's the phone. That's the text, 312-981-7200. Social media, Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. We will keep you up to date on everything there. So follow us if you choose. Big show. Man, we're going to talk movies in a few minutes. Blake Stubbs is going to join us. You've heard Blake on with Nick before. We are going to talk about the winners and losers of the summer and then look forward, because now, oh man, it's Labor Day. So now we got to look into the fall movie season. Some big movies coming out. We'll talk about some of those. And today is Labor Day. Why is it Labor Day? How did Labor Day come to be? How big a part in the labor movement in the United States does Chicago play? I can't tell you any of that. I can tell you some. But Professor Kevin Kaufman is the host of the History of the United States podcast. He is going to join us after 2 o'clock. We're going to talk all about the labor movement in Chicago and in the country. After 3 o'clock, I'm throwing the doors open of the Overnight Arcade. Yes, oh, the game is back. And because Tuesday is the first day of school for Chicago Public Schools, we are going to get in the scholastic mood and do scholastic bowl questions. These are actual middle school scholastic bowl questions. We will see how smart you really are as we all get ready to go back to school. Then we'll talk about, we'll continue talking about school, because everybody looks forward to the beginning of the year. Sam, I know you're very, very excited that school is starting. You look about 12 years old. I know you're in, what, 8th grade, maybe a junior in high school. You're going back, but every memory of school is not that great. Perhaps a teacher has scarred you for life. We will talk about those moments. Also, before we get out of here this morning, surprising news for high school sports in the state, especially one sport in particular. So we've got a lot to get to. And I can barely stand up because I started back at the gym on Saturday after a little way too long a hiatus. I was like, because I started back. Most of you, Sam, you might not know this, because you've only known me in this state, but 8 years ago, I weighed almost 400 pounds, and I lost 160 pounds. Over the last few years, some of the pounds have come back, and I've put the brakes on that, and now I've been a couple weeks back into my healthier eating and living, and part of that has been walking more, but I had to get back to the gym, because there was a stretch of about 3-4 years where I was going to the gym 6 times a week. I was insane. And then a couple years ago, it started to dwindle a little bit. But anyway, so now, yesterday, and I didn't make the mistake that a lot of people do. When you haven't gone to the gym in a while, you go in and you try to really overdo it. And you go, yeah, I can lift, oh man, I can lift a bazillion pounds. Look at me, I can do 857 crunches. I went in and I worked out pretty good for an hour, but I didn't overdo it, except, and I'm not asking you to massage me or anything, Sam, so don't go to HR, but the inside of my thighs is very sore. The muscles on the inside, I don't know why. I don't know if it's, so at some point I may just crumple, and you may say, well, why are you standing up then instead of sitting down? Because I'm trying to stay awake. So that's the only, it's one of those things, it's that good kind of pain, You're an athletic guy, right? You work out.
Yeah, yeah. I do. In fact, I wrestled for 14 years, actually.
Did you really?
I did.
Wow.
You've never seen the scar on my arm?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Good
That's
Lord.
A great story. Yeah, actually, girlfriend came at me with a knife.
Is that what?
No.
No, that would be a better story. No. Would somebody snap your arm during a wrestling match?
Yeah, I bumped up two weight classes, and I went to throw the guy. And when I threw the guy, I posted my arm up, and my arm went...
Oh,
yeah.
No.
18-pound difference came crashing down. So
wow. That's all it takes, 18 pounds?
18 pounds of fast
like
movement.
Like aviary bone syndrome, that little brittle bird syndrome?
I wish not.
Wow, that's horrible.
Yeah, it felt horrible.
Did it end your wrestling career?
It was my last match in my senior
year. Was it really?
It was. Ryan Regionals, St. Charles East High School.
Wow, represent.
Represent Fighting Saints.
Are you wearing a sniglet right now?
No.
Or a singlet?
No.
Is that what they call it?
No.
That is what they call it, right, though? That's the wrestling deal? And they do... When you're wrestling in high school, you got to wear the ear stuff so nobody rips your ears off.
Yep, headgear,
right?
Cauliflower ear, a little pus coming out. Nope.
All right. Wow, that's a little too gross. But thank you for being very descriptive. It's theater of the mind. You've painted a horrible picture, but we all now can see a.
It's 1 a.m. What can I say?
I don't know. And you've been here since 10:30 this morning.
I have.
This is quite frankly ridiculous. Good for you. I hope I made it at least, we'll try to make it easy for you the final 4 hours, but then you have to stay like 6 more hours to podcast everything that you've been doing all day.
I'm here till 7.
Wow. Well, it is Labor Day, but part of Labor Day was them fighting for an 8-hour workday. obviously, nobody in the early labor movement was a radio producer.
Apparently
wow.
not.
All right. Well, because you came out, we'll give a little behind the scenes. I was doing my work, getting the show ready, as I always do. And it was about midnight, and I'm thinking, now you and I have been communicating, so I knew you were planning on being here. I knew you had you knew the show what time the show started, but I hadn't seen you, and I was like, I wonder where Sam is. And all of a sudden, you came stumbling out of the back. Your hair disheveled, you had one of those weird airplane pillows around your neck, and I was like, did you just get off a flight? You'd been napping in one of our spacious huddle rooms, right?
Quality nap time.
Quality nap time.
You got to get the nap. Nap away to stay awake.
I've listened.
Otherwise, I'm going to be like you and stay behind the booth.
I tried to take a nap today. In fact, the plan was... my wife and I were trying to figure out, because it's the last weekend of summer, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, you know what? I'll cook dinner, but we'll have dinner at like 2:30 or 3 o'clock, so we'll have a nice dinner, maybe a couple glasses of wine, and then I'll be ready to take a nap. You can't, if you're not used to napping during the day, you can't just go, yeah, today's the day I nap. I'm laying in bed, oh my God, and my mind is running around. And then you're like, well, I got to get up soon, so go to sleep. And I'm not going to sleep. And your mind just keeps messing with you. So then I get in and, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. Let's do this because Blake Stubbs is waiting. He's waiting patiently in our palatial green room to come in. We're going to talk movies. I'm looking forward to it. So let's do this, and then we'll do that. 312-981-7200. If you want to get involved in the conversation, if you have any thoughts on summer movies that you thought were great or questions for Blake about maybe movies that are coming up in the fall, we'll get to all of that and so much more after this. 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick D, 720 WGN. You know, on Monday mornings, Nick and Tom and Nick's crew, they talk a lot about movies. And I love the movies. I feel bad. This summer, I haven't really seen a lot of movies, but the fall is coming. New movies are here. Blake Stubbs is in the studio with me, which is a nice change. Welcome. We're glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
You hear Blake. I've talked to Blake before on the phone, so it's
yes.
Nice to see you in person. Blake is on with John. He's on with Dane. You're all over the place.
I float. That's the easiest way, I think, to say it.
But it's great, and you were in town, so it's lovely to have you in.
Yeah,
in person.
A heck of a weekend in Chicago for me. I started out, I went to AEW All Out with a bunch of friends. We're all lifelong wrestling fans, so that was like a dream true, going to the pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah.
Long show, but cool show. Great wrestling. And then today I went to the Cubs game, and then I snuck a little nap in there, and then I thought, you know what? I'll come into studio if we can make that work out. So
yes.
I'm happy. This is awesome.
It's great to have you. Let's start with the weekend, because I haven't seen any of this franchise, and yet Angel Has Fallen with Gerard Butler is the number one film at the box office this week. Now, this is the third in this series.
Yes.
It was what the
Olympus has fallen.
Then London has fallen.
Then London has fallen, and now Angel has fallen.
And
yes.
Angel is the present.
The present.
Right?
Well, Angel in this case is Gerard Butler's character, Mike
Bannon.
He's
the guardian angel.
He's the guardian angel of the present. I mean, because he's sort of ascended through the Secret Service to not only become, you know, Eagle Detail, the guy that protects the president, but also, like, essentially he's getting to the point where he's going to be head of the Secret Service.
Okay.
And so everything goes awry. I mean, to say that, that's like an understatement.
Yes.
Nick Nolte shows up in this movie.
There, you say that sentence, I know things have gone awry.
Yes. And I mean, here's the thing. If you tell me Nick Nolte's going to be this grizzled former, like, veteran who probably has a lot of issues he's never dealt with and is going to make an impact. And actually, he plays Butler's father in the film, who's trying to stay off the grid and gets dragged back in. And it's this whole these action movies, and this is something that I found interesting, is that Gerard Butler, and I'm quoting another critic. I believe it's Bill Jabiri out of New York. He mentioned how, like, Gerard Butler is like an action star who gets put in movies that feel like they're amalgamations of other action stars' movies. So think, like, it's like they borrow from Liam Neeson, Bruce Willis, and, like, maybe a little bit of Tom Cruise, and then they just, like, it's like a blender, and then they give it to Gerard Butler. But here's the thing. Even if these movies aren't considered excellent, Butler is consistently good in them.
Okay.
He fits the bill for what we want in an action star, even if the films are a little too wild and a little too flimsy compared to, I don't know, say something like Mission Impossible Fallout, which to me was one of the best action films of the last few years.
Wow, okay.
And I saw it three times in theaters. I was in love with that movie. So this particular film, the fact that it's doing well for what its projections are holding, I think it's doing okay, and it's held the box office this weekend.
It's made $40 million.
Which is its second weekend, and I think it's on its way to doing okay. The question is it going to drop off with the onset of It Chapter 2? Which I'm not trying to jump too far into my preview,
Friday,
but yeah, that's this week. So there's some hope that the movie will hold steady and keep making a little money. I think that the vibe for the movie is pretty good. The critical response is like what you'd expect.
Yeah.
It's, you know, but overall it's considered by some an entertaining action movie. And again, I think that is a lot to Butler. I think that this guy that for some reason is a good actor.
Yeah.
And regardless of what he's in, he stays consistently good. And as long as he continues to do that, I think his movies are going to do okay.
So these are fun kind of action thing to get away and see. Because, like I said, I remember when seeing the trailers for all of them and not realizing, oh, they've got a little franchise going here.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with this one, everybody comes out, oh, the third in the franchise. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The Fallen franchise.
And what kind of throws me off is that I feel like unless we're getting geared up to see big event-type action movies.
Yeah.
There's only a few franchises that people really go out to see. One being, the example I'll always give is John Wick.
Yeah.
If there's a John Wick movie out, we're going to the theater. Now, I'm a huge John Wick proponent. I think there's something in those movies that is akin to everything I've ever loved about action movies growing up. There's a charismatic lead. We love Keanu. Like, we're in the Keanu sense is what it's being called.
Yeah,
now.
This I was going to mention. I wanted to talk when we're – well, we'll talk about it now since you brought it up. This summer, it was like the summer of Keanu.
It was.
Between the new John Wick, John Wick 3.
Yes.
Parabellum, was it?
Yes, John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum.
And then he was the voice of the Daredevil guy in Toy Story 4.
Yes, Duke Kaboom,
Kaboom. Everybody, it was like he went away and then reinvented himself as this action guy.
Yeah.
Because when the first John Wick came out, everybody seemed a little skeptical, myself included.
Yeah.
I love the first two. I haven't seen the third one yet, though.
So I won't spoil anything because that's been the one movie that I have probably pushed people to see more than anything else this summer. This movie is not revving up the intensity, I think, as much as what 2 was, because 2 kind of like really picked up like a blockbuster level.
It was almost insane.
this movie stays about on keel with that, but the intensity of each scene, because it's more like I've sort of said it's akin to like watching good musical theater.
Yeah.
Because musical theater, when it's really at its height, has all the songs hit and they have narrative beats that like help forward the story along.
Right.
That's how they treat the action sequences in this. And if you know a little bit about how these movies are made, like the guy directing these movies and sort of like ushering how they're shot and everything is Chad Stahelski, who was Keanu's stunt double on The Matrix
films. Oh, okay.
So they've known each other for over 20 years.
Yeah.
Their working relationship is outstanding. And you can tell that the camera loves Keanu and Keanu loves the camera when you're watching these movies.
Right.
Like, they're some of my favorite shot movies of the year, even though, like, you know, cinematography is always my favorite category at the Oscars.
Yeah.
as much as I always want to like throw John Wick movies in there, like I know that I got to keep it real perspective wise. However, you're in for a treat when you go see a John Wick film. And Parabellum is a, I think it's an elevation of the style of what they want these movies to be.
Yeah.
I think the world building continues to get, it gets a little bigger. I think that the characters are interesting enough that we're like, we're not just here for Keanu. There's a little more dish to this one. And I think that, you know, Halle Berry and the dogs, you're in for a treat when you go in there, too.
Okay.
That sequence alone is, I think, it's a long action sequence, but it's an action sequence that gets more and more intense as it goes on. Okay. And I think you might be surprised at how cool certain things play off in that movie. So, yeah, that's a movie that had a good theatrical run. I mean, it made money. It they're going to continue to make them. I think we're due for another one in 2021.
Okay.
So, they pretty much announced that, I think, after like the first week.
As long as Keanu can keep doing it.
Yeah, and as long, and that's the thing, like, I think he's totally willing to keep doing it because all the stuff that it, you know, takes for him to get ready for those movies, that's stuff he enjoys doing anyway.
Right.
So, and he, it's funny, the reason why I think we all love Keanu so much is that when you watch him in any interview, he's like the most humble, like down-to-earth guy.
And then there was the whole big thing about, you know, how he, when he takes pictures with people.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden he's come back, like you said, the Keanu sense.
Yes.
He's back.
And, well, and we've got a Bill and Ted movie coming that, you know, fans of that cult series have been wanting for so long. And I don't even know if I'd call it a cult series. It's just, it's one of those like staples, I think, when I was a little kid.
Oh,
and now it's like, wait, they're going to do another one? I'm all in on this. Like, whatever this guy wants to do. Like, it's like having that friend who's like, well, I'm going to go do this thing now. And you're like, you know what? I like everything this guy does. I'm all about it. And here's the thing that I've always thought about Keanu is that I think he is a good actor. I think he's a good actor with a good range if used properly.
Right.
I don't think he has, like, I'm not going to cast him like I would Gary Oldman.
Right.
But I would definitely cast him like I would anyone in the, like, Bruce Willis, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone category.
Yeah.
But he's also had some pretty good romantic roles. You know, I mean, he can flex.
What's the one on Netflix? Always Be My Maybe.
And he kind of steals, he gets to steal his show, the show and his scenes, and he's really enjoyable in that movie and hilariously funny. And the people he's working with are funny. Like, he can build chemistry, I think, with a lot more people than he's ever been given credit for. And I think now he's just making really good choices.
And he started out, you know, it was kind of the same character at the beginning.
Yeah.
It was the Bill and Ted guy. And even when he was in Point Break, it was Bill and Ted joined the FBI.
Yeah. You know, well, watch him in The Parenthood. He's essentially playing, he's playing the Bill and Ted vibe the whole time. So,
So now he is completely believable as John Wick.
Absolutely.
And I think that he proved that with Speed. I mean, all the way back.
That's a good one, too. That's a very good recommendation for somebody who wants to get that early action vibe Keanu and see what he was all about. I think his intensity and speed helped sell the movie. I think his chemistry with Sandra Bullock was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
I also think that his work with Jeff Daniels, if I'm being honest, like Jeff Daniels is like an emotional crux of that movie, and he's outstanding in it. And the other thing is that, you know, that's a really solid 90s action movie that if you're like, you know what, I just want to throw something on and watch it, I think you'll probably get sucked in. I mean, Dennis Hopper alone might suck you right in, but yeah.
Blake Stubbs is in the studio with me. We're talking movies. On the other side of the news, we're going to I want to ask you one quick question about the summer, and then we're going to start looking at the fall, because there's a number of movies that I'm excited about. I'm sure that you have a lot that you're excited about. We'll talk about that. If you have a question for Blake, 312-981-7200. You can follow Blake on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. Let's do this. Then it's news time, 720 WGN. Thank you, Don. It is Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Blake Stubbs is in the studio with me. We are talking movies. All right, we're just a real quick recap of the summer. Nothing bigger than Avengers Endgame, right? That was the movie. That was the event. That was the one movie I saw this summer.
Yeah.
I couldn't wait. I did wait like a week only because I hate that the first week crush.
Yeah.
But then it got to the point where I was like, I know I'm going to hear something that's going to spoil it, so I have to
get there.
You
got to go. Yeah.
And it was wonderful. Other big winners, The Lion King did pretty well.
Toy Story did well. Toy Story 4 did well. Spider-Man Far From Home did very well. In fact, it was the first Spider-Man movie, I think, to eclipse a billion.
Like,
really? It passed, yeah. The other ones for me, big movies this summer that aren't necessarily Disney, because Disney are like
everything
we just mentioned. I was a big fan of The Farewell, which did very well.
It was with Awkwafina.
Awkwafina, yes. Very intimate family story that honestly, I'm of the mind that if Roger Ebert were still with us, that would be playing at Ebert Fest.
Oh, wow.
This next year or the year after, because I think he would have loved it.
Okay.
And or at least the message of it. You know, I mean, you never know what a critic's going to think of something from a technical standpoint, but
right.
It definitely hit all the beats that, you know, as a Midwestern guy like Roger, like I totally was like, I'm all in for this movie. And only, I think, like through the first act, I was like, they've won me over. And it has actors that aren't necessarily familiar to American audiences because it's primarily a Chinese family.
Yeah.
There are a few select actors you might recognize, but on the whole, it's like, I like going in and seeing a movie where I don't really know anybody and I can just, you know, take it for what it
is. Right, and then you're there for the story.
But they totally sucked me in. So if you get a chance to see The Farewell, and I believe you still can here in Chicago, you should get out and see that movie.
Okay.
It will likely be considered at the Oscars. I hope it is. It's that well made. And it's picked up a huge following, at least on Twitter. The director, it's her family story. And so audiences are seeing this in more places than you would think because of the success that it's had. And now it's not making Endgame money, but it's the type of movie that because of its budget and the fact that it was produced, you know, in two countries and it's done so well, it's expanding. So you're getting more chances to see it.
Nice.
Rocket Man was fun. It was good. It's a cool jukebox musical take on Elton John's life. Different than Bohemian Rhapsody, which was trying to be like a biography type film.
I'm going to be honest. This is going to be people are going to be very upset with me. I finally watched Bohemian Rhapsody the other night.
Yeah.
I didn't care for it.
I'm not going to be mad with you because I was not a huge fan of the movie. Now, I can respect the performances.
Right. That doesn't mean I don't like Queen or Freddie Mercury.
Oh, I love Queen and Freddie Mercury.
I'm going to be honest. The teeth. I guess I never paid attention to Freddie Mercury's teeth before.
Right.
I couldn't stop. I was fixated on those teeth. It was nonstop. I'm like, this guy looks like Donald Duck. And I don't.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it pulled me out of it a lot.
And I feel like that movie, to me, and it's because I've spent a lot of time like listening to stories about Queen and Freddie and the creative process and things like, when you know the timeline of Queen, you know that like the band never really broke up. You know that like, you know, I think they tried to talk about how like in 1981, that's when they were doing something with We Will Rock You. That's the scene. That was in like 77 when We Will Rock You was released. Like they play with things where it's like, I know they're trying to tell a story here, but it's bothering me. And that's hard for me to disconnect when I know those things.
Now, is it the same thing with Rocket Man? Because I haven't seen that.
Okay. So Rocket Man is more of a jukebox musical where like his music fuels the narrative, but it pays no attention to when certain songs came out. So like, Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting is like him as a kid singing it, and that's how they transition him into an adult.
Okay.
It's like that doesn't make, but if it's a jukebox musical, you can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So the music fuels the story as opposed to the music being released at certain times is like, oh, well, this is where his career really took off. No, that's not how it plays.
Okay.
It's more, you're going to like it, I think, because the performances are good.
Yeah.
And honestly, Dexter Fletcher, who was the director who had to usher in Bohemian Rhapsody after Bryan Singer's departure, he directed Rocket Man.
Okay.
So there's a lot of similarities in how the film looks.
Does Elton John have giant teeth?
He does not have. Right, he has prosthetic teeth, but he doesn't have giant teeth.
All right.
They're a little less distracting.
Good.
And then, honestly, a couple other movies worth mentioning. Midsommar, Ari Aster's horror. It was like it's the slow burn horror film that like really. It's the sequel, not sequel. It's the second. I need to say this correctly. It's the follow-up to Hereditary, which was a big success.
Right, yes.
It didn't make as much money as Hereditary. In fact, I think it almost made about half, but it just had a re-release this weekend with a director's cut. It's a long film, but I think the performances in it alone are worth watching.
Okay.
Florence Pugh it's one of the performances I would argue you shouldn't miss if you are a movie lover and you want to see great acting.
Okay.
She really kills it in that movie.
Midsommar.
But by the way, it's a disturbing film, so leave the kids at home. And, you know, if you're easily offended, maybe don't go see that one. But I did like Midsommar. And then finally, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, because that's still doing well at the box office.
Yes.
Everybody's talking about it.
108 million last I checked.
Some people seem to love it. Other people, it's very polarizing,
I guess, is
the way.
Yeah.
There's no middle ground on this one.
There's two particular scenes in the film that I feel are the most divisive elements of it, and it's not the ending.
Okay.
Now, I'm not trying to spoil anything,
but
whatever you think you know about the history of, you know, August 9th, 1969, it's going to help you, but at the same time, don't expect what you think you're going to see. Like, okay. It's Tarantino.
Right.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay.
But there are two scenes in the movie, one in particular with Brad Pitt's character, Cliff Booth, that has very much caused a lot of discussion about what is being implied here. How do we feel about this character afterwards? And I think what's important about all of that, and the other sequence is the scene with Bruce Lee.
Okay.
Those two scenes are within the same sequence of the film. And to me, that's some of the better editing of the film because it kind of goes layers deep. Like, there's Brad Pitt having this moment, like, reflecting on this thing that happened. Then it goes into the flashback of him having that moment. And then within that, there's a flashback within that. And then they come back up into the first flashback and then out into the reality of it. And in the end, it's all in Brad Pitt's head.
Okay.
And so whether you take it literally, you're going to have certain reactions to it. Whether you take it from the standpoint of, well, it's all how Brad Pitt saw it. Or his character, Cliff Booth.
Right.
It'll change your impression of the film. Now, if you love Tarantino, you're probably going to enjoy this film.
Okay.
I'm not saying you're definitely going to, but you're probably going to. I enjoyed this a great deal. I have seen it 3 times. I'm gearing up for a fourth this week before it leaves theaters because I don't know when that's going to happen.
Okay.
But I want to see it again.
Okay.
And I think it's one of the richest cinematic experiences of the year from the craft standpoint.
Okay.
So the acting is superb, whether you like what these characters do or not. The cinematography, Bob Richardson just kills it. I mean, it's outstanding. And he works so well with Tarantino. And then, of course, you got Quentin's dialogue. It's his style. His soundtracks are better than anybody else's.
Right,
like, you know, all the things that you would hope for out of a 2-hour and 41-minute Tarantino film, you get.
Okay.
You will get your money's worth when you watch this. Now, if you're very astute in like when things play and where things play, you might have had a chance to see it in 70mm at the Music Box.
Right.
I did one of the 3 times I saw it. I saw it there. That was an awesome experience because that was a super hot crowd. Not everybody's going to get that experience.
Yeah.
So when you go in, like, I don't know, at this point in its release, I would say try to go like on a Sunday matinee when like maybe no one's there.
Right.
And then you get your own take on how this film plays. And that, I think, is the only way to really experience it right now. And I did enjoy it, though. So I think it's going to be talked about it come Oscar season, big
time.
Right,
let's take a quick break, and then we've got to get to some movies that are coming out soon because I have questions. I know we've got a big one coming out this Friday with It Chapter 2. So Blake Stubbs is here. We're going to talk more movies with Blake on the other side, 720 WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick D, talking movies with Blake Stubbs. You can follow Blake on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. All right, we've talked about the summer. We've lived in the past. Now we must look to the future.
Yes.
The fall movie season is upon us. I can't believe I'm saying that sentence. it makes me a little bit sad. But I will say I cannot read a Stephen King book. I have tried many times. I don't need 72 pages to describe the drapes.
Mm-hmm.
But I watched the first installment of It.
Yes.
And this week, It Chapter 2 comes out. These are the Losers Club 27 years later. So
years
this
later.
Is the last, this is the second half of the book.
Yes.
Which is where I was a little, you know, as I knew this was happening, I knew they were splitting it.
Of course.
But as I'm watching the first one, I'm like, oh, the second one should be here already. I need to finish it up.
Yes.
Yeah. What do we know about this second chapter?
We know that by and large, everyone who's cast in this film to play the older versions of the kids that honestly I thought were all solid actors
yeah, yeah.
in the first one. They were very good. Everyone's like a home run.
Yeah.
So the
Bill
big
Hader,
star is gonna
James
be Bill,
McAvoy.
Yeah, Bill Hader, James McAvoy, Jessica Chastain. In particular, I'm hearing a lot of buzz about Bill Hader. I'm hearing he's like a superstar in this movie.
Nice.
And look, if you're watching Barry, you know that
Bill Hader's
not just the guy from SNL anymore.
Right.
Okay. Bill Hader has always been more than that, but now he's getting to play.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, he's kind of, I think he's on his way to getting a blank check to whatever Bill Hader wants to do. And if this film is one of those big transition pieces film wise for him, I wouldn't be surprised. The other thing is Bill Skarsgård is back as Pennywise.
Ugh.
And let's talk about that performance from the first one.
Too
pretty
creepy.
Scary,
yeah,
man.
Like, very scary.
And that's what we needed. I didn't want someone to come and try to do what Tim Curry did in the TV miniseries version of this story. Although,
right.
look, don't ever say an ill word about Tim Curry. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Right.
I love Tim Curry. However, this was different. Right. And it needed to be. And it was scary.
It was
scary. The voice, the look, the fact that he can, his eyes look a certain way. Yeah. All of that stuff is just home run material. And the director who's doing both films, Muschietti, I think is his last name, or Muschietti. I forget how you actually pronounce his last name. But
yeah.
All of these actors kind of dove in head first. I read a quick little snippet about how Chastain had to do a scene where she was in like a bathtub of blood. But it's like she's standing in it and she's covered in it. And it took like most of the day to film it. Now, I actually have experience with fake blood being covered in it in a short film. Okay. So let me tell you, if somebody says that's what we're doing today, you're in for probably the most miserable filming experience you've ever had, because the stuff will dry. It will get crusty. You have to pour more on yourself. It just gets worse and worse and worse. I've had my clothes peeled off me from a short film that I was in called The Transient. If anybody wants to go out and check YouTube, I'm told it's played on the Big Ten Network for off and on for years. Oh. So maybe you've seen it. But in that case, the day we filmed that scene, I was only covered, I think, for like 2 hours doing it. And they had to peel my clothes off me. It's awful. So knowing that like these actors, you know, might have had to go through a few things on set that weren't comfortable, but like whatever it takes to get it right. And they were all on deck. Like, I'm all for movies like that when it's that chemistry that works so well. And I hope it translates.
Let's
when we see it.
Everybody talked about Endgame being so long. Reportedly, this is 165 minutes.
Yes. So
it's going to be it's another one where people are trying to figure out when they can go to the bathroom.
When they can go to the bathroom. And all I'm going to say to that is that if you if you're one of those like me where occasionally you buy like a giant soda, maybe get the small.
Yeah.
Or, you know, don't drink a whole lot of liquids before you go and just kind of go in and know
a lot of salt.
A lot of salt. Yes, that's a good call. Now I'm okay with long movies. I'll always be okay with long movies.
I don't mind a long movie. I just, you know,
you want to be able to prepare.
Advanced stage, Blake, I have to plan that stuff out.
You got to plan, yeah.
You know, if I'm going to have a beverage, I have to know.
You got to know. Yeah. And I think in the case of this, the length will help this film because, like you were saying, you know, Stephen King books are long and they're rich reading experiences if that's what you're into. However, in the case of this, I think going a little longer and ensuring that they wrap this story up fully, I'm 100% game. Now, we've all seen maybe the miniseries or we've read the book, so like I'm curious how they're going to play out the final sequence.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like,
gonna be...
and I hope that it's not rushed. So if that extra 20 minutes or whatever is
with 165 minutes, I don't think it's going to be. All right, I got to ask you about this because I saw the trailer the first time I saw it, I laughed out loud.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe we got another Rambo movie coming.
Yes.
This is Last Blood.
Last Blood.
Now, I am fascinated with characters who start a franchise one way and then become a cartoon, and Rambo is one of those. The first Blood was phenomenal.
It was phenomenal.
And he was this gritty, this misunderstood veteran who had been like tossed aside.
Right.
And then he was hassled by the man, and it was great. And then he won the Vietnam War in the next movie.
Right.
And I just watched, I watched part of Rambo to help fall asleep last night.
Yes.
When he took on every Burmese warlord.
So, yeah.
And so now he's back, but he's living on a farm.
So, in a way, Stallone is kind of doing with Rambo what he did with Rocky, where he takes like a break and it's like, okay, look, maybe this film didn't work so well, so I'm going to act like it didn't exist. And now I'm going to finish the story the way it should have been. So
Rocky Balboa was a great ending.
Rocky Balboa was a great ending. And the Creed films have been very good, I think, to the Rocky character.
Yes.
I don't think that they're trying to like reinvent the wheel or anything, but I think that passing that torch has been done effectively with Adonis Creed.
So what is going to happen
with Last
John
Blood?
Rambo?
I read a headline the other day that said it's basically, what is it, Home Stallone? It looks like it's he's going, you know, Kevin McAllister on a drug cartel who he makes angry. Now, look, if you tell me that's the pitch and it's going to stick to that, I'm all in. But if you go back to the original First Blood, it ends with him trying to go home to, like, a farm.
Right.
So this is more like, do we just ignore, like, everything else that Rambo's done? And, like, we're going to say, look, you can treat the Rambo universe, because we're going to go with that. There's
a Rambo universe.
We're going to treat it like there's the cartoony stuff like you were talking about, because that's how it looks. It's looked at now.
Yes.
It's pretty cartoony. Or is he is he going to play it more like the grizzled First Blood Rambo? Which, by the way,
because there's somebody, I'm trying to figure out the relationship of the girl who's kidnapped, because the cartel take somebody
right
who's close to Rambo.
And I'm wondering,
which I don't know, there's anybody who was close to Rambo.
I think the misinterpretation that we've been given through the trailers is that maybe he owned the farm, but maybe he just worked there, and her family
maybe
owned it, and so like he really cares about them, and like she's supposed to inherit the farm, and you know, these people are harassing, and he's all like, ugh, you know, he's got to go after it. And
now, this is not going to be 164 minutes.
No.
I'm guessing 88.
Yeah.
To wrap
look,
this up.
I hope this is a tight movie that gets really good with the action, gritty, and then in the end, like, we're all sitting there like, all right, that was a good end. That was a good finish to this character's lifespan on the screen.
I hope he blacksmiths his own sword like he did in Rambo.
I really
hope
he does.
That would be terrific.
Now, here's the thing. I actually enjoyed Rambo because Stallone, when he was making it, was like, I'm making the most R-rated action movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I went and saw it, I was like, this is the most R-rated
insane
action movie I've seen in a while.
I forgot how graphically violent it was. It was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it goes
terrifying
beyond the idea of what, you know, bullets hitting people looks like in movies. Like it was set to frappe. That's the easiest way I can describe it.
Very nice. Okay, the other one that I'm seeing a lot of talk about is this Ad Astra.
Yes, this, Brad Pitt's new
Brad
film.
Brad Pitt and Tommy Lee Jones and
there's an assortment of other good actors in this movie. Yeah. Basically, Brad Pitt's an astronaut who's going to go track down his dad who's gone missing.
Who was an astronaut, too.
Was an astronaut. And
is in space?
Yeah.
Okay.
Whatever this is seeming like, while we talked about the Keanu sins,
yes.
I think we're in a world where we're also going to get a good year of Brad Pitt.
We haven't seen Brad Pitt in a while.
No, but he's also pretty selective, and
sure,
he knows that when he picks a movie, he goes all in. And I think Ad Astra is going to be a nice juxtaposition to the Cliff Booth character from Once Upon a Time.
Nice.
So I think he's setting himself up for two Oscar nominations in a way. I don't know if he's going to get them, but
right,
I think if I had it my way, now I haven't seen Ad Astra, I want him to get one for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood because of all the talk, the controversy. Like, I think people are talking about this performance more than, even if they hate it, like, they're talking about it.
Well,
and I think that says something.
Get some buzz going
for the quality, because nobody's saying it's a bad performance.
Okay.
They're just like, oh, I don't
they
like what the character
the
does.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Real quick, somebody texting in from the 815, going back to Rambo, and the last scene of First Blood, they said the name on the mailbox says Rambo.
So that's his family farm. There you go.
Family farm.
That's true.
And maybe we'll find out that everything else was just a dream.
Oh, see, they're going to Bob Newhart Rambo.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what they're going to do? Oof. Oh, boy.
Troutman shows up.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny, I just got rid of that sheriff.
If they digitally recreate Troutman, I'm totally okay with that. I mean, you know, we've seen some good stuff. Speaking of the digitally recreating, I'm going to jump ahead into November.
Please do.
The Irishman. Scorsese's The Irishman, which is 3.5 hours long. We've all heard it. It's going to be a long movie. But November 27th, it drops on Netflix. November 1st, I believe it's getting a New York, LA theatrical release. It's my understanding that AMC Theaters and Netflix can't come to an agreement, so I don't know what the likelihood of it getting some kind of expanded release before the Netflix drop is. However, there are more than just AMC chains in Chicago, so Chicago is a really good movie city. I'm hoping that I'll be able to make a road trip up and see this bad boy on a big
screen.
Because, you know, from the fact that you got De Niro, Pacino, Pesci, Scorsese, like, everything is, the stars are aligned once again, that if this is their last run together, I'm all in for
it. Yeah, and let's hope it's a good one.
And the digital work in the trailer, they were very careful to show you specific shots of how young they make De Niro look. And maybe it shocked you. Maybe you're like, well, De Niro doesn't look that much younger. Look at a picture of Robert De Niro today. Now, De Niro looks good.
Right.
For, I think, 75.
Right. But he's...
But he looks like he's about 50 in the movie. They said they were going to de-age him about 25, 30 years.
Okay.
And the look of it is solid. I mean, he looks a little bit older than he did in Casino, I think, in this first trailer. So I'm intrigued by how that's going to play. Plus, I'm just begging for a big, long, epic Martin Scorsese movie with actors that...
We need another good Scorsese movie.
Yes.
All right. Before I let you go, the one everybody's talking about, Joker.
Joker's
coming out October 4th.
October 4th.
You've got...
You'll get to see it in 70mm if you go to the music box.
Yeah.
They've got a special engagement they're going to do for that. So Chicagoans who want to go see Joker, you might see me there October 4th or maybe 5th. I don't know. We'll see what I can do.
I don't know.
Looks like Taxi Driver?
what it's supposed to. And it's supposed to look that way. And it's reimagining Joker's origin.
Correct.
So there's no Batman. There's just Joaquin Phoenix.
And it's in Gotham. And they're doing this thing where they're going to, I think, we don't know exactly what they're going to. I mean, people who saw it at Venice this week know. all the early reactions are masterpiece, it's incredible, Phoenix is definitely an Oscar contender, like all these things, stuff that I kind of figured I'd hear from the first reactions. The film does look like, I mean, I believe Scorsese is an executive producer on it. So, excuse me, if that's the case, you're going to get a lot of his vibes.
Yeah.
And if that's the, you know, if you go further than that, you think, okay, King of Comedy, Taxi Driver, you're going to get DC, you know, the DC treatment, but they're trying to reinvent the DC cinematic universe. And if they're going to do it, this might be the film that kicks it off. And if I'm DC right now and I've got a film coming out, I want it to be a completely different world and view of how we make our movies from how Marvel's doing it.
Yeah.
I want to be a completely different flavor.
But then they have to translate that to their heroes.
Correct.
Because if you do this for a villain, and villains are more, actors will tell you, villains are more fun to play.
It's, correct.
You know, people love the Joker. He's DC's premier villain.
Yes.
They got to do it with their heroes. Right. Or they're never going to touch Marvel.
The one thing that I'm looking most forward to with this particular film is that Phoenix looks so grounded. Yeah. Like, his character doesn't. But the world that he's living in looks very modern, like not super modern, but it looks very like, I think, either
it's
like late 80s
enough,
or it's something where the period that they're trying to set it in, it looks so grounded in reality. It's more like what Nolan was doing, but in its own flavor, and it's got a different look, and it looks like it's going to be an excellent character study style film, and it might be a huge change for what people come to expect from Todd Phillips, the director, who most people know from, like, I think old school, The Hangover, you know, these big comedies, you know, and granted, it's the Joker, so you would hope that you have an effective comedy director that can work with these big actors, and De Niro's in the movie, so that's kind of a cool callback, I think, to King of Comedy, and I'm thrilled to see this movie
soon.
I'm
looking forward to it, and I'm a Marvel guy, but I'm looking forward to seeing Joker. Yeah. Blake, it has been a pleasure. I'm glad you were in town and were able to come in. We'll talk again very soon. Follow Blake on Twitter at Blake Stubbs. Thanks a lot. Have a safe trip back.
You guys have a great Labor Day weekend. What's left of it?
Yes, we'll talk to you soon. All right, that's Blake. Let's do this, and then it's news time, WGN. Brian Noonan in for Nick D on 720 WGN. It is Labor Day. And if you are celebrating Labor Day, you can thank one of the people who helped make Labor Day possible. Think of the early labor movement. I knew a little bit about the labor movement, but I don't know everything about it. But one man who knows a lot about the labor movement, knows a lot about U.S. history, knows a lot about a lot of things, Professor Kevin Kaufman is here. He is the host and creator of the History of the United States podcast. Welcome. Thanks for coming in. It's an ungodly hour, but it's nice to have somebody come in.
Glad to be here. It's great.
So, all right, tell it. First of all, you have a PhD in history.
Correct. Yeah.
I studied history like everybody else in school. What was it about history for you that made you go, this is my thing. This is my calling.
Yeah, it's the stories. Yeah. It really is that's what it comes down to, and when you start delving into that graduate school level of stuff, it's like, okay, what do I really want to say? What hasn't been said that I can explore and you know, shed light on? And that's what draws you to it, I think.
And what did you get your doctorate? What was your dissertation on? What part of history?
Modern U.S.
Okay.
So really 1900s.
Okay.
So at some point, that's not going to be modern anymore.
Right.
But at least for now. And my dissertation is on, or was on, it's been a while, on Alcoholics Anonymous.
Oh, wow, okay.
And its founding and impact and what it's kind of done since it was founded in the 1930s and gone on through the rest of the century, really.
Fascinating.
Yeah, the dissertation stops about 1960.
Okay.
So I could, you know, graduate.
You wanted to finish?
Right.
You know, listen.
And my spouse was kind of like, yeah, you will finish.
It's time to be done.
It's time to be done, Doc. She's the only person who doesn't call me doctor. No. but I've kept an interest, actually, like all overworking historians. You focus a lot on the stuff that happened before.
Okay.
And you stay interested in everything afterwards. And so it's kind of like, and then this part in the middle I know a lot about, but I just over the summer gave a paper about the temperance movement and the novels that were produced to convince people about the horrors of drink and things like that. So it was, that was all from about 1850 to 1870. And so it's kind of, what did that have to do with the 1930s? But it's like, no, I can make it work.
you'll get it in there. So far you've told me two papers you've produced and they both have to do with alcohol.
Yes.
I like the way your history is going. this is the kind of history I am interested in.
There you go. Okay.
So on the podcast, because some people hear history and when we were in school, a lot of it was just dry memorization of dates and facts. It wasn't. What makes the podcast different? What are people going to get?
It's terribly dry. That's what I'm going for.
You want dry? Yeah. Okay, well, good.
I bill it as a something to help you fall asleep. So that
right?
No, I think what makes it different. What makes it great is the lack of constraint, which maybe that's a double-edged sword. Thinking, yeah. Saying it out loud, I'm like, oops, maybe not. But all those things that, like, as somebody who teaches, that I have to be like, oh, I can't talk about that. I got to get moving. I got to to the Civil War.
Syllabus says I have to be at this date by this day.
And I don't have to think about that at all. It's like, we're going to spend another podcast about the constitutional ratification.
Yeah.
And talk about some of those, I love going in and digging into those quotes of statesmen and things like that. And some of the things they would say to each other and how they would, treat things, and finding that historical context is really fun. And I think it makes the podcast a lot more fun.
Yeah.
It's not much of a production. There's no background music or anything.
No
special effects. Mm. I don't have gunfire going off for.
If you had some dueling in the background, or voice actors, or a quill on a paper when things are being
scratching right by.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Well, Sammy, we got to get on this. We got to help the doctor get some more production on, because the content is there. I feel the content is going to be fascinating. Now we just figure out another way to brand it,
right?
Because you, as you said, now you're on the last episode was the third part of the ratification.
Yes.
So you did.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You did start really rolling things out, going, yeah, we're gonna stretch this out. How do you decide? I mean, obviously you love this.
Right.
So for you to talk about it is great. Where do you say, this is, ratification needs three episodes, because it was a big deal. This is something you need to hear more about this.
Right. And actually that's exactly kind of how I thought of it too, of when we teach it really all the way through, it's kind of like, there was this weird thing called the Articles of Confederation. We're not going to talk about that. And all you need to know is it was bad.
Okay.
Okay, great. We're gone.
Thank you.
And then these really smart guys make this Constitution and everybody loves it. And then we're off and running. And I find,
it sounds very simple with the way.
Yeah. And then the Constitution's written and we're done, and it's great. And it wasn't that clean cut. It wasn't that easy. I think it really hurts the opposition of those that were against the Constitution. Basically their name was the Anti-Federalists. And you got to come up with something catchier.
Right.
Federalist sounds pretty good. And what are you? We're anti.
Anti-federalist.
Yeah.
Really?
Wow. Thanks, guys.
That's how much against it you are? You just came up with anti?
Yeah, nothing. And so how long it actually took, too. It took, really, when you get right down to it, almost 3 years for the Constitution to be ratified, to be completely accepted. And in the last episode, I get into talking about how Rhode Island was the last holdout. And there was discussion of putting a trade embargo on them.
Oh, wow.
Of maybe sending in troops if things didn't go the right way. Like that.
That wouldn't have taken long. Rhode Island's not that big.
Tiny.
Yeah.
And they were going to, Newport and Providence, if the vote wouldn't have gone the right way, the last vote they took, Newport and Providence were going to bolt and go to Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
They were like, nope, we're not going to stick with you anymore. And so there was, and George Washington refused to go there on his New England tour.
Okay.
After he became president, he was like, no, I won't be going to that place. And so there was a lot of there was a lot of division that, and then it's going to come up again because Thomas Jefferson and James Madison figure out, man, we were more anti-federalist than we thought. And all that great Hamilton stuff gets thrown in there.
I wanted to ask you about that. Two questions. First of all, since we were talking about the Constitution, on a completely apolitical stance, as someone who studied all this, do you think that when the framers of the Constitution created it, they looked at it as a rigid document, this is how it's always supposed to be, or did they envision it as evolving over time, or did they not put that much foresight into it, which doesn't seem possible because these guys were all about looking ahead.
Right. And I would say, actually, it's as split as it's ever been, okay, even then. And it's funny because Jefferson changes his tune in the middle of his presidency, basically. It's like he was a strict, you know, constitutionalist. Nope, what's written is the way it is. If it's not in there, we can't do it. Most of his opponents always were, no, we can, you know, like Hamilton famously. Yeah, there's a little bit of gray area. We can make a bank.
Yeah.
So it's cool. And Jefferson, when things, you know, like Napoleon comes along with a great, you know, offer you can't refuse for half of your new country. But there's nowhere in the Constitution that says you can make that deal. And
right.
You can't. And it's like, meh, on second thought, maybe. And his evolution on his thought is interesting to watch. James Madison really goes kind of the other way. He's like, I designed this. It was great. But man, I didn't see this coming. And I think, you know, they were just as split as we are now. I think there's people who are, you know, it has to be the way it's written, and other people very much the living document. They even use that phrase as they were framing.
Okay.
This is a living document. Yeah. This is, you know, so.
Well, it's interesting then to see that things haven't, while a lot of things have changed, some things haven't really changed all that much.
No.
We're still debating whether this document is, you know, the word of God on a stone tablet or, you know, a good guideline that we can, you know, we can work within its constraints.
Right. And that's what I like about looking at the dissenters is that, no, it wasn't that easy. It wasn't that uniform. And they brought out a lot of interesting arguments against the Constitution. And again, they will get played out as the next half century goes along until, of course, it gets to a real massive crisis with the Civil War. But they really put it into perspective that this wasn't easy. So
very nice. All right. Since you brought up Hamilton, one more Constitution question or that, and then we'll get into the labor movement of this country. But as someone who's dedicated their life to history, how do you feel about the Hamilton phenomenon? I mean, because that did seem to get a lot more people amped up on studying history or learning about what was going on.
I for one, love it. I think it's great. Anything that gets people into history is great.
Yeah,
I think the danger sometimes is that, you know, that's all the history people get. And you're like, well, wait, no.
Didn't really happen all in 2 hours.
Right. And
took a little more time.
But to get people to go back and look at it and to be excited about it. My friend, another historian, was sitting next to somebody at the show, and there's a song where they sing Washington's farewell address.
Yes.
And this complete stranger, you know, whispers to my friend, who he didn't know was a historian, like, that's the real address, you know. And my friend was thinking, yes, I know, I've kind of done this. but the fact that somebody's sitting there excited to hear Washington's address, that's really cool. And I think that's, you know, to kind of bring it back to historians, I think there's nothing wrong with being popular.
Right.
And I think a lot of historians have trouble with that.
Well, I mean, just the word history makes you think kind of, it makes you think old and stodgy.
Yeah. Point.
So for something like Hamilton to inject this new blood, and like you said, there will be some people who got very excited about not only that part of history, but more, and they're going to read. Maybe they, you know.
Right. Maybe it makes them pick up the biography.
Right. Something, because like I said at the beginning, a lot of us after high school or a college class here, we got it, you know.
Right.
I got enough. I can, I get by. I know where when things happen. I know what caused it. I've got the big picture. But something like this, you go, I need to find out more about this.
Right.
You know,
oh,
this
yeah.
particular thing.
Absolutely. And I think that's, and again, that's one of the fun things about history is that you can go down such deep rabbit holes.
Yeah.
You know, that's like, I enjoyed working on AA and working on Alcoholics Anonymous, but I don't have that minutia memorized like some people who really get into the history of the AA program. You know, I mean, one of the first papers I gave about AA was, and somebody asked me the question, what was Bill Wilson's last drink? And it's kind of like, I have no clue, you know?
Yeah.
It's not really that important to me, but okay. But, and it's great that people get that into it. And people still get really passionate about history. It's just, I think, when you're not sitting there.
Right.
When we make it spinach, it really becomes.
And I think that's the peril that teachers have fallen into in the past. That it became, like I said, here's learn this. Memorize these things.
Right.
Oh, but can we. And then, like you said, the rabbit holes are that's what makes it interesting for people, going down these rabbit holes. Because it's, whether it's AA with your papers, or whether it's something that you saw in Hamilton, or anything.
Yeah.
Like the labor movement, which we will talk about in a moment. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is with me. He is the host and creator of the History of the United States podcast. You can just look up History of the United States podcast. Just Google that, and there you go. So we will talk about the labor movement because it is Labor Day. We'll talk about it in the United States as a whole. We'll talk about it in Chicago in particular, and we'll have some fun with history. If you have a history question, sure, feel free. 312-981-7200. More with Dr. Kaufman after this, 720 WGN. Today it's Holiday Matinee Baseball on Channel 9. Watch the Cubs battle the Mariners today at 1 on WGN TV Sports. Yes, maybe you're off today because it's Labor Day. You'll be sitting around. You can watch baseball. But why do we have the day off? It's not just to buy mattresses. Professor Kevin Kaufman is here. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is a historian. He is also the creator and the host of the History of the United States podcast. Have a good time with U.S. history, which is what it's all about. Because once people are having fun, Doctor, then they want to learn more and they want to keep going. All right, so let's, before we go to news, let's just let's just take a brief look at this. It's something that has taken, you know, hundreds of years or 100 years to get going, but we'll just start. Let's start with the country in general. When did the labor movement start? I know Chicago, which we'll talk about the specifics later, I know Chicago has been a hub of the labor movement since its inception, but how did things get started?
They really get started, I would say, as industry starts to come about, I think is how we kind of think of the labor movement to a certain degree. And also really within the trades, because that's usually what we first hear, you know, is trade unions.
Right.
That you are specifically, and it's kind of a descendant of guilds and that whole idea. But the trade unions, especially in urban centers like New York, and Philadelphia, Boston on the East Coast before Chicago even is around.
Right.
Those organizations are very powerful. And they manage to have a certain amount of voice in city politics and, you know, kind of what goes on in those places that I think you can kind of see. Now, they're not, you know, they're not supremely powerful there, but they have a certain say. And then as industrialization takes hold, as we got to start to get into the 1840s and 50s and railroads and all that kind of stuff, trade unions are starting to try and figure out who and who isn't in the labor movement.
Okay.
And for the longest time, trade unions did not want to have anything to do with unskilled workers. That was kind of like, no, they, you know, you don't even need to know how to do anything. They shouldn't be a part of our brotherhoods and our organizations. And when we really think of the labor movement, I think in the United States, it's that segment getting organized is where we really that unskilled labor becoming organized around different ideas, that mass movement I think, is really where it gets in. It's not nearly as specialized. And they have to fight for a lot more, even just recognition, because people that they work with don't even necessarily
want
them around.
Yeah. Right?
And so, yeah.
So was it... I mean, obviously, we know all the issues that labor has, the unions and things, have working conditions, wages, things like that. At the beginning, was it all about wages, or was it, you know, was it conditions, or was it an amalgamation of all of those at the beginning? What kind of set it off, the movement?
I would say what set it off is really the great cause, and the one that really kind of puts labor, you know, into the forefront, is the 8-hour workday.
Right.
And that does get tied up into everything of pay and conditions and things of that nature. But the idea of an 8-hour workday, and it was for 6 days a week. They didn't even, you know.
There was no weekend.
There was no weekend.
Yeah.
You know, so if you got Sunday off, you were doing really good.
Right.
And that really becomes kind of the crux of the movement for a long time. And that's what many of the things around Chicago have to kind of coalesce around.
Yeah.
And then, of course, there is the conditions, and there is the treatment of workers, and having any kind of a big thing is I can't think of the right word right now, but some kind of, not guarantee, but some kind of protection of being just fired, you know, and wages cut at right. the whim of a boss. You know, that was really a big part of it too, that you had some kind of, you know, assurance that it wasn't just going to be gone tomorrow. Just,
yeah, like you said, at their whim. We're going to talk more about Chicago in particular, because you alluded to the 8-hour workday, and that led to one of the big episodes in the labor movement here in the mm-hmm. city. We'll talk more about that. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is my guest. He is the creator and the host of the History of the United States podcast. History of the United States podcast is how you find it on the internet. We will do this, then it's news time, and then more with Dr. Kaufman. We're talking history. If you have a question, 312-981-7200. It's WG. Oh, I can't believe that on Labor Day we are lamenting winter. Dr. Kevin Kaufman and I are in here talking about the impending... We know the snow is coming, Sammy. Don't give me that look. It's September 1st. It's going to be snowing in like a week and a half.
Negative.
You just tapped into my whole my wheelhouse. Negativity. That's how we do it. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is here. He is the creator and the host of the History of the United States podcast. Have a good time with U.S. history. We were talking about the Constitution, which was great, but we're talking now about the labor movement. We started out in the big picture, kind of the whole country. But according to the Chicago Federation of Labor, Chicago is like the hub of the labor movement. Most local number ones are based out of Chicago. Mm-hmm. But let's start with the 8-hour workday, because you brought that up before the news, and that has the whole Haymarket. Everybody's heard of the Haymarket riots.
Mm-hmm.
How was that and the 8-hour workday? How did all this come about? What is that for the uninitiated?
The Haymarket riots, the Haymarket incident, whatever you want to call it, was demonstrations, actions against the McCormick Reaper Company.
Mm-hmm.
That started, I want to say, May. They started on May 1st, which was a big
right.
European holiday. A lot of people, because this is a huge time of immigration in the United States, too. So they brought over that festival as well.
Okay.
And it became associated with leftist causes and the labor movement. And so they had one of their mass demonstrations against the company then. And there was a large police presence at the Reaper Company. There were... employees that were hurt. I think a couple were killed. I can't remember exactly offhand, but it leads to Chicago anarchists deciding to organize.
Okay.
And have a rally on May 4th. And one of the points that they were really striking for and working towards was that 8-hour workday. I mean, and that was, again, that really had become the cause
okay.
of, you know, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, 8 hours for what we will. Good at slogan.
Yeah, that makes
That's pretty good.
Makes sense.
And so they are there demonstrating and speaking out on May 4th into the evening. And they were trying to get as many thousands of people as they could. And they were thinking it's going to be huge. You know, I've seen estimates of only, close to 1,000 to maybe 3,000 people showed up, but not nearly what they thought.
Right.
And even the mayor showed up. And according to legend, he was there constantly lighting his pipe to kind of show off that he was there, because it would light, darkened alley, kind of where it's at, in a darkened area. So you'd see his face. Oh, there's, and he was a very charismatic, interesting guy.
Okay.
And he had a really good hold on the city of the different constituencies. He was, he was able to kind of appeal to a lot of different folks. And so there was that. And he left early. He thought, nothing's going to happen here. It was fine. And really, when the police came in marching in formation, that's when things get bad quick.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, the riot occurs, deaths occur, trials, that. But it really solidifies a lot of folks on the labor side of things that this is the place. This is how we're going to, kind of in a sense, make our stand.
Right. Now, from what I read, that the movement was kind of hurt by this a little bit, because, and you use the term leftist or Marxist earlier. Mm-hmm. Was that a fear of people, or was that what the anti-labor people were using to kind of say, hey, listen, you don't want to, that's
right,
that's something we don't want in this country.
Right, and that's always been a tough thing for labor in general.
Yeah,
but especially, it was, not. Well, I think to American readers and minds and stuff, a lot of those ideas were very new, of Marxism and anarchism. It's late.
Yeah.
those ideas, socialism, those things were very, very foreign to a lot of native born Americans.
Right.
I don't want to say Native Americans. That's a whole other thing.
Sure.
And the fact that a lot of these folks didn't even speak English made it that, so being able to tie in that fear of immigration and fear of foreign influence to all of this, I think made a lot of American workers kind of standoffish to it too.
So how, after this and the setback then to the 8-hour workday, how did it rectify itself?
because you can always count on corporations to do the wrong thing. But really, working conditions don't get any better.
Right.
People still are getting treated poorly, and it still becomes something that people desire, want to have a better life for themselves and their kids and all and their fellow workers. And what's interesting is that, 1886 and the trial and how these people are treated, I think that also made people a lot afraid too of, I'm not going to stick my neck out.
Right.
I barely speak the language. I think six of the defendants weren't even at the riot and still were convicted.
Oops, yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting that it will be another strike that kind of gives it a whole new push, later. And it is because one of the big employers of Chicago, one of the biggest at the time, Pullman.
Yeah, let's get into that. That was because that's the one that came, the next
right.
one, as you said, the another strike that galvanized people.
And it has almost the mirror effect of 1886.
Okay.
That instead of it kind of setting back the labor movement, 1894, everybody's like, no, this is it. I mean, it becomes a national strike, something that we never speak of anymore. But it really became and there was a lot of sympathy strikes going on with it that.
Well, give the background, because it's hard to imagine now as strangely as some corporations act sometimes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that this was actually happening. What Pullman was doing seems completely foreign to us now.
Right. He basically cut wages.
Right.
As the United States in 1893 experiences what they like to call panics, but ultimately it's a depression.
Yeah.
And Chicago is able to buoy itself a little bit because of the World's Fair is still here. But after that closes up, the amount of people that are unemployed in Chicago skyrockets.
Okay.
And kind of what was affecting the rest of the country comes through Chicago, including Pullman. And he decides, well, you know, I think it's the iron law of wages of, well, it's the one thing we could definitely cut, that decides to cut wages. Now, the thing that made it difficult with Pullman, and like you said, it's hard to believe that he basically had a company town.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the Pullman district was in fact, Pullman, Illinois.
Yeah.
He owned all the property. He charged all the rents. He had the groceries. He had, it was all him.
Yeah. So whatever you got paid went right back to him.
Right. So he cuts wages, but he doesn't lower prices and he doesn't lower rents.
Yeah.
And people, and I think it was, I remember teaching this in History of Chicago, and I think it was like three or four representatives from the workers go to talk to the management and say, hey, this isn't working. You can't do this.
Right.
And they fire all of the representatives on the spot, get out of town.
Yeah.
You know, don't let the door hit you. And that galvanized the rest of the workers. And Eugene Debs comes in and he does have the brilliant idea. I think it's attributed to him that the American Railways, the American Rail Workers Union, which is one of those unions I was talking about of unskilled laborers. It wasn't specific. It wasn't like a brakeman's union or, you know, engineers, whatever. He says that any train pulling a Pullman car won't move. Oh. We will work in solidarities with the Pullman employees. So and that at the time, every train had a Pullman car or two or however many. So within a matter of, I think, like even within a week, rail traffic is almost stopped. I mean, just think if airline traffic today stopped.
No, that's
right. You know, just, I mean, you and I probably can remember 9/11 when.
Oh, yeah. It was very eerie.
It
not
was.
Seeing a plane in
not
the sky.
Not seeing a plane in the sky. Not, you know, just that was it.
Yeah. Airports are closed. Nobody's going anywhere.
Right. And the same thing happened to train traffic.
Okay.
And that, and it lasted, you know, for quite a long time.
Now, Debs faced federal charges for that, right?
He did, yeah.
Now, what was most of them were dropped, if I remember correctly.
Yes. I don't think he goes to jail until after World War I.
Okay.
Like for similar kind of stuff, but it's for sedition and, you know, working against the government and that kind of stuff. But I'm pretty sure he doesn't. He may have been charged and convicted, but it was only a fine.
Okay.
That I'm not 100% sure on right now.
Now, when with a national strike like this, which, you know, it starts out a local issue, turns into a national thing. How does the federal government react to this? How did they react to the Pullman strike? Because, as you said, it cripples the nation's transportation and you know.
Right. Well, as is the way of a usual U.S. government policy is to react against the workers. Right. They don't necessarily try and talk sense to Pullman. Instead, they come up with the idea. They get a judge, a court order that says that because they are disrupting not just Pullman cars, but the U.S. mail.
All right.
You are interfering with the U.S. mail. And as we all know from Cliff Clavin,
you cannot do that.
That is a federal
crime.
So that is what gives them justification to call out the troops.
Okay.
And they do call out in, you know, the regular army, which the army base that was used, especially around here in Chicago, was founded right after Haymarket.
Okay.
Fort Sheridan, with a railway directly into the city, just in case there's any more labor unrest. It's a quick shot right in. And that's exactly what happens with the Pullman strike, is they come steaming down from, or I guess steaming... Yeah, down. That would be right. Okay.
Yeah.
Doing my Chicago geography on the fly. But they do come straight through, and they go. I think they wind up outside of Hammond.
Okay.
And they fire on demonstrators. They're on the engine of the train on the front of it. There's these, Theodore Dresser is a reporter for the scene.
OK. Okay.
And he is describing them as, you know, they were holding their bullets in their mouths. They looked like they had tusks and they were ready for, you know. I mean, it's just some great description. Yeah, it's like, again, where has that gone? And
you don't get the flowery writing.
But
a lot of imagery.
But that was the federal response, and it ultimately breaks the strike. But not without a fair amount of casualties. And oddly enough, or maybe not oddly, but that gives the labor movement a lot more life than it had had in the previous decade.
Well, and it's got, we got to take a quick break. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is with me, but when we come back, there's one more, at least one more, there's a few more, but we'll talk about one more, the Memorial Day Massacre. Mm-hmm. And I also want, you know, we talk about wages and conditions and stuff, and one of the big things that labor was able to change was child labor and those kind mm-hmm. of laws. So we'll talk a little about how that came about. Kevin Kaufman is the host and creator of the History of the United States podcast. Have a good time with U.S. history. We're only scraping the surface. So go to historyoftheunitedstatespodcast.com to find out more. We'll get into a little bit more on the other side. It's WGN.
I'm Dave Plyer. Join me this Labor Day Monday as we'll talk to Dirty Jobs' Mike Rowe about the skills gap in the American workforce and his plan to make it right. Christopher Knight, Peter Brady of the Brady Bunch will preview HGTV's A Very Brady Renovation. We'll celebrate the 90th birthday with the TV legend, my pal Bob Newhart. And we'll talk tailgating and give away a brand new Weber grill at 8:50.
Dave Plyer in for Steve Cochran later this morning at 5 on 720 WGN.
Townstone Financial is synonymous with great rates, low closing costs, and phenomenal service to the thousands who have completed purchases and refinances with us since 2002. Hi, my name is Barry Sterner, owner of Townstone Financial. Let's hear about the Townstone experience from one of our customers.
I'm Christopher Nowak, a real estate agent with Castline Properties here in Chicago. When a buyer contacts me with questions about the loan process, what type of loan products are available, it's easy for me to put that buyer in touch with Townstone Financial, and specifically Zach Schwartz, Barry Sterner, the whole team over there at Townstone. I have confidence that the team at Townstone is going to make me look good. The result at the end of the experience is that the customer is always happy with the service they receive.
Remember, nobody values your business more than Townstone Financial, and I'm always available to answer your questions. Call me now at 312-896-2110. That's 312-896-2110. Or go to townstone.com. That's TOWNSTONE.com.
Townstone Financial is licensed in Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida. NMLS 136639. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Housing lender.
Do you have federal student loan debt? Kaplan Law Firm has the secret to lowering your monthly payment and eliminating thousands of dollars in federal student loan debt. If you work in the public sector, if you're a fireman, a police officer, a doctor, a nurse, you're likely qualified for thousands of dollars of forgiveness of your federal student loans. Not in the public sector? Kaplan Law Firm can still help to reduce your monthly student loan payments. Give Ray Kaplan a call at 312-294-8989 or visit financialrelief.com.
Everly has a congenital heart defect, which we found out a few weeks before she was born.
Meet the Becky family.
She had her first open heart surgery when she was 3 days old.
Ronald McDonald House Charities of Chicagoland in Northwest Indiana was there to help.
By being able to stay at Ronald McDonald House, it means that I can be there within 2 minutes if something is turning or a doctor wants to talk to me.
When a child is severely ill, nothing means more than having family close by. To learn more, visit ronaldhousechicago.org.
We are talking history, we're in particular the labor movement in Chicago, and why we are all, well, some of us are enjoying a day off today. Dr. Kevin Kaufman is not, because he's in here with me. And again, I appreciate you coming in. If you want to learn more about history and you want to have a good time doing it, the History of the United States podcast, that's where you go to have a good time with U.S. history, because as you said earlier, one thing, if you're interested in one thing, you can follow that thread and just keep going and going. Mm-hmm. All right, so we talked about Pullman. We talked about the Haymarket incident or riot, whatever you wanted to. Another huge, huge labor incident, tragedy, the Memorial Day Massacre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how did that come about? How did it come about, and then what was the benefit of it or the end result?
Against the Little Steel, mm-hmm. as the Five Little Steel, I think it was,
yeah.
different companies, all on the south side of Chicago. And they were striking for better wages And I think actually they were still striking for an 8-hour workday as well to be regulated. And it occurs over Memorial Day weekend. And unlike a lot of the labor movement that had occurred into the 1930s, because this is 1938 or 35, I always get it mixed up. Probably bad for a historian to do. it's into the 30s. The labor movement had gained
37.
I was right. You were right. So close.
I'll give you the you know, the window on each side.
Which is what I do on exams.
Yeah.
For students.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. I'm like, you know,
as within long as, a year. Yeah.
Yeah. As long as you're close, you don't. You know. Anyway. but they were striking, and in a weird misstep of the era, the Chicago Police Department, under the direction of the mayor, go out full force. There's a famous picture of a guy, of a police officer with his billy club coming right at a guy. And there's other times there's going to be it was kind of one of those things of, wow, that doesn't really happen in Chicago now. There was still demonstrations and clashes like in Detroit and things like that. But it was one of those things that, you know, it was kind of like, what is going on? Because labor had become so much more powerful in that time that almost immediately the reaction, and it's the opposite of what had been the standard governmental reaction, was it was condemned by the national government. I think Roosevelt himself came out against and said something about it, that this was a tragedy. The mayor apologized for the excessive force.
Wow.
Which, yeah, you wouldn't. You just wouldn't hear. And that is, it's one of those moments too where people recognized and kind of almost, I think, almost in shock really of like, oh, wait, this is respected. People are, this is really something. It was a new moment in labor history for the United States.
Well, and when you look at the people who were involved in these early labor movements, between the police and the government and the company hired strikebreakers, it's amazing what you will put up with, or what you will risk when you realize, listen, we're being taken advantage of. This is not working.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, there are threats of physical violence. There's threats of jail. But this has to be done. And it's amazing to learn about these people and watch and see those kind of pictures and go, well, a lot of us would go, I don't know if it's, you know,
right.
I don't know if I'd stand out there and let some thug come and swing a club at me, whether it's not the police, they'd do it, but also just guys that the company hired to come and bash my skull in because I want fair wages and I want to work in a safe environment.
And, you know, and not to paint the workers necessarily, you know, poorly, but at the same time, would I stand on that picket line and, well, they, you know, they push some guys back hard. You know, and but would I stand up for my job that way too?
Yeah.
You know, of what I, again, would I risk physical violence? Would I, you know, those kind of things? And man, I don't know the answer. I would like to say,
You'd like to think that, oh, yeah, I would have been right out there shoulder to shoulder. But, you know, thankfully, we don't have to worry about that much. All right. Now, you said earlier, and I will, if we have time, we'll touch on child labor. But that was one of the byproducts of this whole labor movement, is that now we don't have kids in factories, you know, doing all that. You said part of history is looking back and learning all that and seeing where we are and then kind of looking ahead. In a historical perspective, what do you see for the labor movement now and union, the future of unions, that kind of thing?
I think it has to kind of change with the times of industry is not the same as it was, at least in the United States.
Right.
Things are still getting made, you know, products are still getting made at various places. And I think in some ways that's to really embrace the idea of the internationalness of labor is going to be how it evolves.
Okay.
That actually making labor unions in the places where things are being made is going to be the next, you know, not to start sounding like everybody's nightmare of a college professor. but the workers' struggle is going to be in the places where things are going to be made. And many of those companies are still based right here. Okay. And they haven't stopped fighting against organized labor. And I think that it's just going to be carried out in other venues. And as far as in the United States, I think that different professions are going to wind up unionizing.
Okay.
Eventually.
Such as?
I think, you know, kind of almost playing on the news industry. And seeing how, you know, how strong the writers' guilds and, you know, the various newspapers, you know, taking votes to unionize and things like that. I think you're going to start seeing that more and more, that those kind of, you know, because we're right now, you know, kind of what we were talking about at the break about Uber and
it's this whole gig economy.
The gig economy.
And no that regulation.
There's no regulation, but there's also no protection.
True.
And that's and really when you get down to it, that's what labor and the labor movement's about.
Yeah.
It's about protection.
Right.
And
yeah, there is no, there, those, the people who work for any of those kind of companies are out there on their own.
And it's still, and it's the same argument that was had in the 1800s through the, you know, through the 1900s of, well, you made your choice.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not our fault. You, you know, got black lung.
Right.
And somebody actually stepping up and saying, no, here's why I have to drive 12 hours a day.
Yeah.
So I would like to be treated a little more humanely and a little more justly. I know I don't need $1 million, but something to make this work.
Well, this was fascinating. I appreciate you coming. We'll have to talk again.
I would love to. Absolutely.
History is a non, you know, there's a countless things we could talk about and countless hours we could talk about them. And if you want to spend some of your hours learning a little bit more about history and having a good time doing it, the History of the United States podcast, historyoftheunitedstatespodcast.wordpress.com. You can go there. Listen to all Dr. Kevin Kaufman's episodes. Thank you so much for coming in. It was
a lot
of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
Thank you.
We are going to keep the educational portion of this morning going because I'm going to open the doors to the Overnight Arcade. And on the other side of the news, we will play the game. We are going to use actual middle school Scholastic Bowl questions. So maybe you didn't understand everything that Dr. Kaufman was talking about the ratification of the Constitution, but you think, well, I'm as smart as a seventh grader. This might be your chance to prove it. Sammy, what callers do we want to have?
Two callers.
Yes, do we?
I don't know. Right, this microphone likes to come on and off of me. I don't know.
Caller number 4 and caller number 5 at 312-981-7200. Callers 4 and 5, 312-981-7200. You will play the Overnight Arcade on the other side of the news.
Shall we play a game?
It's a new game, only this time the game is real. Can you handle it?
Everybody play the game.
Time to play the game!
Oh my goodness. Yes, it is the theme for America's favorite overnight radio quiz show, the Overnight Arcade on 720 WGN. I am your host, Brian Noonan. With me tonight for the first time, very exciting, Sammy Martino. This is your first Overnight Arcade. Are you rightfully excited by this? This is a whole new thing for you.
Oh, my gosh. That music intro got me a little pumped up.
That's,
here we go.
That's
we got two
what we
contestants.
Do. We get things ready
a
to roll.
3 a.m. arcade game. Let's go.
Let's go. Very nice. I like your enthusiasm. You've only been here like 15 hours.
I know.
All right. Yes, it is the Overnight Arcade. You know how it works. If you didn't get through to play along with us on the air, then get out of bed, run out of your house, scream and yell, wake somebody up, because during the Overnight Arcade, at-home wagering not only encouraged but expected. Let's meet our players, shall we? First, we go to Schaumburg, where Tom is standing by. Hello, Tom. Welcome.
Good morning. How are you?
I am dandy, Tom. And what do you do for a living?
I'm retired now.
You're retired. What did you used to do?
I used to be a process engineer in automotive field.
Oh, wow. Very impressive. So you probably know a few things, Tom. You sound like a guy who
I used to.
Yeah. And then once you retire, you just put them all away. You forget it.
Right. Lock that box up, throw it out.
Yeah, you don't need that stuff anymore. Forget about it.
Yeah.
Let's see who you're playing against. It's John. He's in Chicago. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
And what do you do, John?
Nothing.
Nothing.
I'm retired.
You're retired too. See, this is what we have to look forward to, Sam. Someday we'll be retired. I won't. I go right from here to the box and then right in the dirt. That's it. But other people will retire and then they can stay up all night trying to win valuable prizes on a radio quiz show.
I think it makes two of us. We're both going to
the box. I think that's fantastic. What did you used to do before you did nothing, John?
I had a limousine service.
A limousine service. Oh, very nice. Very nice. So you know all the streets. I don't know if there's going to be any navigational questions on here, but if there are, I'm sure you will do wonderfully. Gentlemen, these are actual Scholastic Bowl questions from a middle school Scholastic Bowl. So these are questions that were asked to 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Hopefully you will know as much, if not more, than those preteens and early adolescents. Here's how the game works. I'll ask you a question. If you get it right, you get a point. If you don't, your opponent will get a chance to steal. First one to five correct answers, or whoever is leading when our time runs out, will be our winner. Tom, John, do you understand the rules? Are you ready to play our game?
I'm ready. Yes, I am.
Everybody's ready. This is good. All right, now we will flip and see who goes first. John gets the first question. John, here we go. What is the highest mountain peak on Earth? Is it Mount Kilimanjaro, Mount Hood, Mount Makalua, or Mount Everest?
Mount Everest.
Mount Everest is correct, and John is on the board. Very good, John. That's how we start the game, Sam. That's how we do it. We ask questions, somebody gets it right. Beautiful, beautiful. All right, we go to Tom. Tom, I hope you've unpacked your box of knowledge. You are going to need it for this question.
As do I.
Who invented the cotton gin? Was it Samuel
Clark? Eli Whitney.
Oh, it doesn't even need me to read it. Tom, coming out of the box hard. First round, all tied up. John and Tom tied at one. Oh, this is going to be a barn burner, Sammy. This one, I got a prediction. This one's going down to the wire. Very exciting. All right, John, we're back to you. Do you feel the pressure already? It's a high-pressure game. I feel the pressure, and I'm not even... I have the answers in front of me. I should be the guy who doesn't, you know, I should feel no pressure, and yet I'm terrified. John, what is the closest planet to the sun? Is it Venus, Mercury, Earth, or Jupiter?
Mercury.
Mercury. A lot of production value on this quiz show, Sammy. I know you're impressed. That is correct. Mercury, John, putting another point on the board. And we come back to Tom. He's in Schaumburg. He's wondering what the question will be. Wait no longer, Tom. Wonder no more. What is the state bird of Illinois? Is it the bluebird, robin,
cardinal?
Wow.
Awesome!
Awesome. Tom, just let me finish reading a question for my own
edification. I'm sorry.
No, you don't have to wait. You know the answer. You're in. It's 2-2 after the second round. Sammy, if you were a betting man, what would you who would you put your money on?
Ooh,
I know. How do I?
No contest.
Even money. Even money with both of these guys.
I put my money on Sammy Martino.
Wow, always betting on himself. Good for you, Sammy. Good for you. All right, John, back to you. I like to do a little banter. Give the contestants time to sweat a little. Get that little knot in their stomach.
They're sweating.
Here we go, John. What is the smallest unit part of any living organism? Is it a proton, a cell, a molecule, or a granule?
Proton is a part of it, but cell is a unit.
Hold on. What's your answer?
Cell.
Yes, that's what I thought you said, John, but I want to make sure. That is correct. You now have three. Tom has two. And now we move back to Tom. Tom, are you ready? Are you feeling the pressure, Tom?
It's building.
Here we go. Now, listen, Tom, I was only kidding. If you know the answer, you just shout it out. You don't have to wait for me.
Okay.
Here we go. In what country were the Olympics born?
Greece.
I wasn't even going
to... Yes!
You are right. It's 3-3, Sammy. 3-3. This is going to come down to a...
Tree.
All right, here we go. John, we're back to you. John, this American artist is known for his illustrations of small-town life featured in the Saturday Evening Post.
Norman Rockwell.
But
job. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, John didn't even want to wait. He's like, listen, if Tom's going to yell out answers, I'm yelling out answers too. Good for you, John.
That's exactly what I did.
And you are exactly right. It is Norman Rockwell.
I think John's the favorite, but I like the underdog, so I'm taking Tom.
How do you pick an underdog or a favorite? Nobody's missed. John has 4, Tom has 3, but that's only because I've only asked Tom 3 questions. I'm about to ask him his 4th. Which Shakespeare play, Tom, featured the characters Hermia, Theseus, Bottom, and Puck? Is it As You Like It, 12th
Night? Midsummer Night's Dream.
That is correct.
4-4, very good. All right, here we go, gentlemen, it's 4-4.
Give him the spice.
I'm going to change things up a little bit now. It's 4-4. We're about to end time for the first round. No more multiple choice. This is how we do it. Now we just got to know. It's going to be a winner. This is going to weed out the. But both these guys have been yelling out the answers before I've even given them multiple choices. So I don't think this is going to change anything. But we're back to John. Here we go, John. We'll see. This 1999 movie, starring Kevin Spacey and Annette Bening, and directed by Sam Mendes, won the Best Picture Oscar. This one I got to go multiple choice. Was it The Cider House Rules, The Green Mile, Chocolat, or American Beauty?
American Beauty.
That is correct.
That is correct. And as the rules state, John, that is 4. That means you now have 5. That means you are the winner. Congratulations. It was just on this one, it was just the luck of the draw who went first. Tom, you put up a wonderful fight. It is a wonderful fight. And because of that, I cannot let either of these players go away without a prize, Sammy. Both of these men deserve something. John, we're going to send you a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling. They are the 60-Minute Men. Call 855-955-HVAC. So, John, you are going to be the prized winner of that desktop indoor weather station. And, Tom, because you put up such a fight, this was neck and neck. I have a feeling if Tom had gone first and John had gone second, the game would, you know, our winner would be different. We're going to send you a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate, John. Tom, you get to visit the Chicago's best deep dish pizzas home. You can find one of their 40 Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. So you're getting the pizza, and we are giving John the weather station. And, gentlemen, you have been fantastic. Thank you for playing the game. Wonderful job this morning.
Thank you.
So have a great morning. Sammy, I think I'm putting, yes, I've put them both on hold. Fantastic. All right. You know what? We've had so much fun. We're going to do this again. One more round. What do you say, Sam? Sure. One more round.
One more round.
4 and 5 again. Caller 4 and caller 5. Is that a good number for you?
I like that.
You like 4 and 5? All right. Callers 4 and caller 5. 312-981-7200. You are going to play another round. We might make it a little more difficult, but Scholastic Bowl Trivia on the Overnight Arcade. 312-981-7200, caller 4 and caller 5. You play round 2 next.
Game on!
Game on!
Time to play the game!
Well, Sammy, I know this is a holiday weekend, and it is usually the game was always played at 2 o'clock. It seems a little late. At this point, we have one player. We have just one player, so it's not much of a game. But I will say hello to Patrick. He's in Rolling Meadows. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You are awake. We are now the line. Now, if you hang on just 1 second, Patrick, we are going to have somebody to play against you. I was just going
to
give you
somebody to lose.
Wow, I like that. So, Patrick, what do you do for a living?
I own my own heating and air conditioning business.
Ah, very nice. Are you working today, or are you taking Labor Day off?
No, unless I have an emergency call. No, today is a day off.
Well, that's good. There's nothing wrong with taking a day off, right?
No, I love it.
Yeah. Now, this is the time. What are you asking me, Sam?
Should we do 2 callers or 3 callers?
No, just one. Just one. Just one more. We got Patrick.
Hey, as a heating and air conditioning guy, I just want to tell everybody to keep their thermostat where the fan sits, to on or auto. Keep that fan switched to on. It'll help your bill. It'll make your house more comfortable.
Now, let me ask you a question, Patrick. This is completely self-serving. When you got the central air, that fan should be spinning, right? That fan,
that fan should be on all the time. And the electric motor, anybody that knows anything about electric motors knows that electric motors love to run. They do not like to stop and go, stop and go. They like to run constantly.
Put it on. All right,
And again, I just want to say, it's called forced air for a reason. If you leave a fan switch to on, to auto, you're not forcing the air to do anything. It does what it wants. But nobody explains that to everybody.
Well, now you
so
did.
Everybody, so if you look at a thermostat and you see the fan switch that says on and or auto, you don't know what on means. You know what auto means. So everybody goes to auto.
All right. But yeah. Yeah. Well, see,
I'm telling you, everybody needs to turn their fan switch to on, and they will be like, oh, my God, my house actually is balanced because you're forcing the air to do what you want, not what it wants. But anyway, let's go with this game. I want to kick some butt.
Wow. Listen, you just put on a tutorial because I'm one of those guys who always had it on auto. I'm going home and changing the thermostat right when I get home.
You better, yeah. You got to make sure you change your filter.
Oh, sure.
Because you're going to be filtering your air more because you've got your fan on constantly.
Perfect.
Right?
Well, let's see what Frank. Frank, do you have any? Do you have any advice, Frank? Frank's in North Lake. He's playing the game. Hi, Frank.
Hi.
What do you do, Frank?
Pardon me?
What do you do for a living?
I'm retired.
What'd you used to do?
I was a retired sous chef.
Oh, very nice. Frank, I got to ask you, because Patrick was very adamant about this, on your thermostat, is your fan set on or auto?
My thermostat for the AC?
Yeah.
Automatic.
All right, put it on. Put the fan on, according to Patrick. He's an HVAC guy.
You'll love it, man.
You'll
be amazed at how much better your house is. Like, yeah, again.
All right.
I love you.
So,
again.
All right, so Patrick and Frank, here's what we're playing. We're playing Scholastic Bowl trivia. These are actual middle school Scholastic Bowl questions. I'm going to ask you a question. If you get it right, you get a point. If not, your opponent gets a chance to steal. First one to five correct answers, or whoever is winning when time runs out, will be our winner. Gentlemen, you know the rules. Are you ready to play the game?
Yes, sir.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Frank gets the first question. Frank, what is the largest planet in our solar system? Jupiter, Uranus.
Jupiter.
Oh, wow. He goes right to Jupiter. That is correct. Frank's starting us off. Correct answer. All right, Patrick. This is not an HVAC question. It is a question about clouds, which, if your electric motor blows up, you might see one coming out. How many basic types of clouds are there? 3, 4, 5, or 6?
4.
4. Yes, cumulus, stratus, cirrus, and nimbus. End of round one. We are tied at one. We go back to... Oh, Frank, this is completely random, but this is right up your alley. This cooking term means to drench in a liquid and then ignite. Is it braise, poach, simmer, or flambé?
Drench in liquid.
What? Hold on, Patrick. Flambé. It's no, Frank's question.
Did you say to drench in liquid?
And then ignite.
That would be flambé, like the Greek thing.
Yes, souvlaki.
Cherry's Jubilee.
Cherry's Jubilee. Yes, it is flambé to set something on fire. Patrick, you were very excited. It's not your turn, but now it's your turn. What it
needs? Yeah, I was a cook at like 15, man.
I've set stuff on fire, so I don't know if that qualifies
right.
me, but I do that too.
Right.
Name the first artificial satellite that was launched into space in 1957. Was it Orbiter, Sputnik, Navigator, or Explorer?
Sputnik.
Nice.
Yes. Tied up 2-2 at the end of two rounds. This is another neck-and-neck game, Sammy. The knee, Frank, the knee is considered which type of joint? Is it a ball and socket, a hinge, a pivot, or a saddle? The knee is considered which type of joint? Ball and socket, hinge, pivot, or saddle?
I would say a ball.
Ball.
Oh!
Ooh, Frank, that is incorrect. It is not. Patrick, that means you get a chance to steal. The knee is considered which type of joint? Ball and socket, hinge, pivot, or saddle?
Saddle.
Saddle. No, gentlemen, the knee is a hinge joint. A hinge joint. Nobody gets a point on that. We go to Patrick. Patrick, Illinois joined the Union in 1818, making it what number state? The 18th, the 20th, the 21st, or the 23rd?
I'm going to go 18.
You're going to go 18. I'm going to go, that's incorrect. Frank, you get a chance to steal. Is Illinois the 18th, 20th, 21st, or 23rd state of the Union?
21st.
Very nice.
Very nice indeed. Frank now has 4. Patrick has 2. That means...
Oh.
Yeah, that's all right, Patrick. Oh, wait, no, this is Frank's question, because he just stole that. So, Frank, you have 4. Get this one right, and you will be the winner. Are you excited, Frank? Are you ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right. How many teaspoons are in a tablespoon?
3. 3.
Sweet.
Is correct. And that means, Frank, you are our big winner. Congratulations, Sammy. Oh, isn't this exciting? Another round. Very nice. Frank, as our big winner, we are going to send you a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. So congratulations on that. And Patrick, not only because you played a great game, but because you had valuable thermostatic information for everybody, we're going to send you a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com.
Can I just say thank you, sir?
You definitely can. Thank you.
And I would like to say hats off to Frank. Great game,
thank
Frank.
You.
Very nice.
Thank
Patrick,
you. A good
you
game.
You are a good
again,
sport.
I love this guy. This guy's the best. Well, you know, when I stay up, I love to listen to Nick.
Well,
I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when Nick
rock
is
on,
here,
brother.
When Nick is here, he will appreciate it. Nick is off tonight. But thank you, Patrick. And thank you, Frank. And let's do this. And then it's news time. Oh, it's Brian Noonan in for Nick. Nick is off tonight. It's a holiday, or this morning. It's, that was funny. It's, I did learn something from Patrick, though, our contestant on the game. I don't know how much control you have over your thermostat, Sammy. I don't know your living situation. I know today you live here. you know, I don't know if they allow you to have access to the thermostat here in your palatial apartment that we call the Club 720.
The Club 720.
Is that where
was
you
my
slept?
Sleep. Yes, sure, that was. But Patrick wanted to apologize. He said,
"Oh no, he didn't. But that didn't bother me at all." People, listen. If you don't know, it's all right.
What a funny guy though. That
it was very
was
funny.
Cracking
no, but,
me up.
But he was right because I have always put my fan on auto because I thought, well, then when it reaches a point, it'll automatically turn on. But there's something going on. That's why I asked him about my fan. And yes, sometimes I use this show to serve my own purposes. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world. Yes, sometimes it is just about me. We had the air conditioner was making a... It wasn't really cooling everything off. It was running, but then I looked out. I walked out on the deck, as I'm wont to do, and I looked out, and the fan wasn't going on the motor was running, but the fan wasn't spinning. And I'm like, I'm no HVAC guy. But this doesn't seem to make sense. So we'll have to see. Now, the rest of the week, it's supposed to be, according to Don and every other weather monkey that I'm listening to, it's supposed to be very nice, except for Tuesday. It's going to be very warm, humid. I might need the air conditioner. But who knows? But that's just me. That's really doesn't matter. What are you bringing me? Are you bringing me something exciting? What is this for? Oh, this is the weather. When am I supposed to do this? Do we have times? No. What? 45. Oh, yeah, 45 and 15, right. Okay. Well, we'll do it in a few minutes. I don't want to rush things. People are used to having their weather at 45. If I do the weather at 36, that's going to throw people into a tizzy.
They might call you Brian Noonan, finally.
Nah, I don't want to listen. I don't. Listen, here's the thing. If they don't know who I am, when they complain, I don't know, some guy trying to get air conditioning advice for himself. Didn't do anything for us. That is good. Listen, any advice is good advice. That's, we get a little bit of... Have you been seeing this footage of this hurricane coming across this Dorian?
This monster.
Unbelievable. Now, they're saying that the waves the waves are 18 to 23 feet high. The winds, they were gusting over 200 miles an hour. I can't even imagine what that's like. You know, you see the pictures. First of all, this is why I like being in radio. Because these poor reporters that they send out to stand in the hurricane, that's who labor, going back to our conversation with Dr. Kevin Kaufman, that's what we need to do. Those TV reporters need to a little stronger union to go, we're not standing out in a hurricane. They're telling people to evacuate and run away. You're sending us out to stand there while things get going. So catastrophic damage in the Bahamas. Again, I keep watching. Now I'm on the TV now. They're showing that this is the model that bothers me the most, the spaghetti model. When they pull that up for a hurricane and they show like 18 different paths that the hurricane could take. Now, I get it. It's nature. We don't really know. But I don't know what string to follow. I'm bad at playing any sort of parlor game. I don't know. Well, I'm going to follow the green one because I'm Irish. That puts us right on course for, complete devastation of the entire state of Florida, which is not good. So now they're saying it may not make landfall at all. But if you're within 30 miles of the eye, which if you're on the, the Atlantic coast of Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, it's going to suck. So, I don't know. I was thankful because my brother lives on the Gulf Coast of Florida, one of my brothers. So I texted him the other day and I was like, and I feel bad because every time there's a hurricane aiming at Florida, I text him. Everything okay? He's like, yeah, we're boarding up. He had windows put in his house that can withstand 170 mile an hour winds. I'm like, if you have to build your house so they will withstand, maybe not the best place, but he's right across the street from he's right on the Gulf. So if there's a hurricane that comes up the Gulf, he's getting whacked. So I guess you need that 170 mile. You don't have to board up your windows then, which I guess is good. But you're also hoping that, whoever is creating these products know what they're talking about. So there is a mandatory evacuations all the way up and down the Atlantic coast of Florida. They're talking about perhaps instituting a mandatory evacuations in South Carolina starting later today or early tomorrow. The storm seems to be slowing down a little bit. So, of course, throughout the news and throughout the day, we'll be keeping you updated because I know the hurricane is not coming here, but we will feel some effects, and many of us have people that we know in Florida. Plus, anytime there's a potential for part of your country to be wiped out, you should pay attention. That's I see these pictures from the Bahamas, and it's horrifying. So they did do a nice thing in Florida, though. They suspended all the tolls, so you don't have to pay tolls now. You can just get out, which... I'm driving yesterday. I told you I started back at the gym, but this has nothing to do with tolls. So I went to the gym because I knew we were going out to Indiana to pick apples. And you may say, how are those two things combined? Well, Sam, I don't know if you've ever picked apples at an orchard. They make these things called apple cider donuts.
Which sounds delicious.
They are delicious, which is why you need to work out before you go to the orchard. Because now you're going to be walking around, which is fine, but you got to have a donut. And an apple cider. You have to. It's a yearly tradition.
It's a must.
You got to. So we're taking going over the Skyway, going over the Indiana Toll Road, which is a racket. The Skyway's a racket. $5.30 to cross a bridge. What is this, the Billy Goat's Gruff and the city is the troll? $5.30 to cross. And I have an iPass, which I found out doesn't work. Because I get an email last week, one email that says, hey, we've put more money on your iPass. Fantastic. Then I get another email. You've got too many video tolls. And I'm like, video? What? I got my iPass. Well, I, of course, ignore that email because I don't know. If I figure, I don't know what they're talking about, I'm going to pass. Well, turns out we get stuck. Not at the Skyway. At the Skyway, we just blow through because they don't have the gate. But when we get to the Indiana toll booth, I pull up, and I've got my iPass in the window, and nothing is happening. And now there's people behind me, and I'm honking my horn, because no one will come out of their little booth to open the gate. And I'm honking and honking, and I can't back up. I don't realize they have a credit card machine at the toll booth on the Indiana Tollway. I can't back up because now the guy behind me not only is swearing at me, which I understand because I'd be doing the same thing if the idiot in front of me. So I'm waving the iPass out the window so he sees that I'm like, hey, I'm not just an idiot. I'm an idiot with a malfunctioning piece of machinery. So finally the gate goes up. We get to the next one, and now I know I have to go to a guy, a person in the box, which, you know, God bless you people who work at the tollway in the box, because that has got to be terrifying.
Sounds like the penalty box in like hockey.
It is. You feel shame. You go to the box. You go to the box.
Get in the box.
That's 8 hours a day in the box. Just standing there, watching people go by, taking their filthy money, you know, answering dumb questions like, why won't my iPass work? The guy goes, I don't know. I go, I said, well, here's my money. I said, I got this iPass. What should I do? He goes, give it to me. All right. So I hand it to him. And he's holding it, and he waves it in front of something. And the guy goes, it works. No, it doesn't work. I'm like, all right. So now the next toll booth, I realized it cost me more money in tolls to drive to this orchard than it did for all the apples that we bought. Oh. And we bought 700 pounds of apples. Because if I'm paying that many tolls, I'm only going
those
once.
Apples better be worth it.
They're,
I'll tell you.
My God. They're right off the tree, Sam. They're fresh.
Okay.
The way God intended them. They're not shiny, though, which throws me off. Because when I'm at Jewel, I buy the shiniest apples. Because I'm like, a child. I look at, ooh, that's shiny. I want the shiny apple. None of them are shiny on the tree. So it takes me a moment to recalibrate my brain to go, all right, they're not shiny. Yeah, because they're not covered in God knows what they cover them with to shiny them up. These are, these are matte finish. If you were a graphic designer, these are M-A-T-T-E, the matte finish. Anyway, now I forgot. The point is, the iPass still doesn't work because now we're going through another open road toll and, the white light's supposed to go on if it were. Nah, it doesn't work. So I don't know what the guy in the box did with his magic wand to make it work for him. He's like, well, you got to mount it on the window. I've never had it mounted on the window. I always hold it up well before I get to the toll booth and it always works. And he, for a guy who told me I had to mount it, he was holding it in his hand in the box and it worked.
Here's a question, though.
Yeah.
Isn't it connected to your license plate? So even if you went through, it would still mark it because you have your license plate. It takes the picture?
It does. But the email that I ignored, much to my peril, when you go through and it doesn't read it, it takes takes a picture. Well, I guess after you reach a certain number of pictures, then they go, hey, jerk, we're going to just, now you got to pay full freight. But they're still taking money out of my account to replenish the iPass, so they know the iPass is full. There's something. So now I have to find an Oasis, because you got to go to the Oasis. And so now I got to go to the Oasis and go in, and I'll be tempted by Sparrow and Starbucks and all the other food groups at the Oasis as I stand above. Where?
So that makes two of us.
Yeah, so, now I got to go deal with
it. Little Aunt Annie's or something.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Man, the Auntie Ooh. Anne's pretzels. Right. There was, oh, man.
Bada beam, bada boom.
There's a lot of stuff going on at the Oasis. A lot of chicanery, I think, too.
Did you ever try that Popeye's chicken sandwich?
I did not. I didn't get
to hop on the bandwagon?
No. Listen, here's the thing. All right, let's take a break and we'll talk about that. if you fell a victim to the hysteria that was the Popeye's chicken sandwich fiasco, well, we got to talk because there's a problem in this country, and I don't have a solution.
What's the problem?
Well, hang on. That's the tease, Sam. In the business, we
I
call
like
that a
tease. Okay.
And now we'll come back and talk about it after this. Well, listen, for what they you guys, producers make it huge money here. So you'll be with all this overtime and triple time and holiday pay. You pretty much retire on Tuesday.
It's funny, though, as much as, it's tiring, exhausting, I come to work every day happy because I like doing this. This is fun. You're producing, you're running radio shows, you're talking to people all over the Chicagoland area, so
yeah.
I get a kick out of it.
No,
so.
It's fun. It's, it beats breaking rocks for a living. There are people who are working long hours doing really hard work. Like those people making those Popeye's chicken. See what I did? I brought it all back.
There we go. Here we go.
Oh, man. Here we go. All right. Popeyes. So, first of all, so it was Popeye's, and who was the other one? Who were they? Was it Chick-fil-A? Sure. Popeye. I don't go to Chick-fil-A anymore. You know what we forgot to do? The weather. Today, it's turning more summer-like for Labor Day. Areas of low clouds, early fog, sunrise temps in the upper 50s to the mid-60s. Then they will rise to the low 80s inland, low 70s along the beaches. Monday night, isolated late-day evening thunderstorms may pop up. Most areas will stay dry. Tuesday, temps reach the upper 80s. Scattered thunderstorms develop in the afternoon and evening. Wednesday, considerably cooler and less humid, a high in the upper 60s and low 70s. Same for Thursday. Right now, 61 at O'Hare, 63 at Midway, 65 along the lake. All right. So everybody, oh, man, big thing. Big thing led this whole week. Everybody, oh, Popeyes versus Chick-fil-A. And I don't go to Chick-fil-A for a number of reasons. I haven't been to Popeyes in a while, but I'm a big, being a lover of New Orleans and all things New Orleans, I enjoy a Popeyes. I haven't had it in a long time.
Popeyes is good.
Popeyes is good.
Cajun style.
And people love Chick-fil-A. I just, you know, for whatever reason. But this is the problem with this country. And I know we need a distraction. I loved when the alligator was here in Humboldt Park because it gave us a distraction from all the other crazy stuff that's going on. We need a break from some, you know, we need a break. So it's like, oh, look, now we can debate a chicken sandwich.
A chicken sandwich.
That's it. And I'm sure if you talk to people in Nashville, they'll go, you don't know hot chicken sandwiches. We've got hot chicken sandwiches in Nashville that'll, you know, punch you right in the throat. But there were people buying these Popeye sandwiches and then trying to resell them on the street. That's what's wrong with this country. Because, one, you're putting that much stock in a fast food chicken sandwich. And I haven't had it. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I would imagine it's good because most of their products are good. And I would imagine people, you know, the other one's good too. But who has the thought in their head, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to capitalize on this. This is how I'm going to make my fortune. This is my get-rich-quick scheme. I'm going to go in and buy 57 fast food chicken sandwiches and then hope that there's people who are dumb enough to buy a lukewarm chicken sandwich from a random guy with baggy pants out on the street out of a plastic bag.
Famous rapper Quavo actually bought like hundreds of them and is selling them for $1,000 online. $1,000 for a chicken
Wait,
sandwich.
Wait, you're selling a chicken sandwich online. How good? Now, if I'm the people from Popeyes, one, I'm happy because my chicken sandwich is selling. But then I'm like, wait a minute. You're going to buy one of our sandwiches that we prepare hot and fresh, and that's how we want you to eat it, hot and fresh, not wrapped up, mailed to somebody who bought it online for $1,000. And if you're somebody who buys a used chicken sandwich online for $1,000, I want to meet you because I have a lot of crazy stuff you can buy. You know, I have a half-eaten sandwich out in my lunchbox out here. I've got an old apple. I've got all kinds of things. You can buy, oh man, I'll sell you all kinds of stuff. Who, you know, Popeyes is going to bring these back. It's like the McRib. It's like all these things that people get all worked up for. Oh my God, the sandwich. The sandwich is coming back. Popeyes isn't stupid. So they only sold for a little bit and then they sold out. You know why? Because now they're going to bring them back and you people are going, oh, I got to get another sandwich.
Supply and demand.
Of course, we love supply and demand. I'm all about capitalism. And you would say, well, if you're all about capitalism, what about the guy selling lukewarm sandwiches out of a bag on the street? If he wants to try it, good. My problem is the people who are buying them. You know, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't. Did you try any of them? Have you eaten any of these spicy chicken sandwiches, Sammy? Did you have one?
I did. And
how was it?
The bun tastes like chicken. The pickle tastes like chicken. The chicken tastes like chicken.
What's a chicken sandwich?
It tastes everything like chicken. It was delicious.
How was the spice? Was it? I like a nice spice. Because Popeye's regular, like their spicy chicken is a pretty good spice.
It's got a kick to it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's a chicken sandwich.
Yes.
I mean,
come on. That's all it is. It's fried chicken on a bun.
Exactly. It was delicious, though.
All right.
I mean,
Now, did you do a sandwich-by-sandwich comparison?
No.
Just went and got one.
Absolutely.
Now, where'd you find it? Did you buy it from a guy on the street?
So my brother
paid $1,000.
My brother had to wait in line, he said, for 30 minutes to get one, and he got two of them, and I had one of them, and it was delicious, but chicken sandwich is a chicken sandwich. Nothing's worth the hype.
Or standing in line. I can't imagine standing in line for 30 minutes.
Yeah, it's too long.
For a chicken sandwich. Where, you know what? Every Every fast food place has a chicken sandwich. Are they as good? I don't know.
McDonald's, McChicken Dollar. I love it.
It's not a bad sandwich.
It's not a bad sandwich whatsoever.
Again, these are all things I haven't had in so long. Because But there was a part of me, because I was going out to see my mom, and there's a Popeyes right near her house, and there was a part of me that wanted to pull in. And then I thought, I'm not getting sucked into this chicken sandwich vortex. Because then, if I have that chicken sandwich, to be an educated consumer, I got to go have the other chicken sandwich. I'm not going to do it. From the 847, I know that you're going to talk about chicken, which we have been, but I stopped at the Denny's in Hoffman Estates last Friday around 4 in the afternoon. They were out of bacon. It's a travesty. It's when you storm out.
Denny's, what are you doing? What's the matter, you?
At some point, your manager has to be held accountable. That's absolutely a fireable offense.
Absolutely.
Ran out of bacon. I'm not calling for this person's dismissal. I'm just saying perhaps they're not the best person at
their
job. That's
like McDonald's saying, hey, we ran out of hamburger
meat. We got no burgers.
Yep, sorry.
You know, you got bacon on the menu. And you're a place that serves breakfast all day. One of the breakfast staples, if I'm not mistaken, and I don't think I am because I'm pretty good with my breakfast staples, bacon is one of them.
Of course.
It's part of the A number one team of breakfast dishes, bacon and eggs. It gets first billing over the eggs, not only because it's alphabetical, but because it's better, because it's bacon. You got bacon on your cheeseburgers. You got bacon in your omelets. You got bacon just as a side dish. You probably make a bacon milkshake.
You can do a bacon mac and cheese, too, or something.
I forgot about the bacon mac and cheese. How do I forget about that? So you're right. There's a lot of things. Oh, boy, here we go. I just saw this. Somebody texted, my vote for best spicy chicken sandwich would be a local chicken place, Fry the Coop. I just saw a thing about them in the Trib, I think, or somewhere online. It was Fry the Coop. They were like, oh, if you didn't get to try the Popeyes one, now try this one. Everybody's going to have their own spicy chicken sandwich favorite.
I think the overall message I learned from this whole chicken experience.
Oh, you learned something from this.
I did.
You have a takeaway.
I do have a takeaway.
All right, what's your takeaway?
It's the power of social media. If everyone can make this chicken sandwich trend so much,
yes,
then the power of social media can make anyone rich. Think about it. They had no advertising whatsoever. Somebody had it, and then it started trending. Boom, boom, boom. And then retweet.
No, they had a TV commercials running for it.
But $128 million they profited from that. And that just shows the power of social media can make a company or even a person rich.
That's why they have influencers, social media influencers. I don't even know what that means, but I know they're out there, and I know companies are paying them.
It's true.
I got to be an influencer. That's why I keep, I post a lot of pictures of me having a beer or a cigar. I'm hoping to become an influencer. Maybe one of these companies will finally pay attention. Oh, yeah, this guy. He's drinking too many beers and smoking too many cigars.
I guess my influencer would be the neck pillow.
That would be nice. That's a good look.
There we go.
Is that a Blackhawks or Bulls?
Chicago Bulls.
Don't get upset with me.
I'm not upset.
Take a tone.
Come on.
Taking a tone. I couldn't. One, it's not on your neck right now. Two, I knew it was a sports franchise and it had black and red on it. So it was one of two. And I guess both teams in town that were black and red. So I had a 50-50 shot that your neck pillow was.
One looks like a hawk, one looks like a ball, though. Come on.
Right.
Get it right or say it twice.
Well, now when I'm seeing it, I know it's the Bulls. But when all I remember is black and red and it's not in my field of vision, I'm going to take a guess. And I guessed, I guessed one, and it was wrong. Oh, my goodness. Have we solved the world's problems yet? Have we solved this chicken sandwich dilemma?
Never.
Never. Right now, you know what? I want a chicken sandwich.
I can go up and
Yeah, right
sandwich.
Now I want a chicken. This is the problem when at this hour of the morning, when you start talking about any kind of food, and it's happened to me here before, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, because, haven't eaten since last night, and now it's, now this is the time when I'm normally asleep. I don't know about you. I don't know your habits. But 4 o'clock in the morning, I'm usually asleep. And then when I get up, I have breakfast. Well, now I'm up. So it's breakfast time.
I don't know what habits you're trying to say I have.
I don't know if you stay up all night. I don't know if you sleep. I don't know what you do.
I sleep nice and tight.
All right.
With my fan on, not auto.
Oh, you got to have it on.
See what I did there?
I like how you brought it back. That was very good.
Yeah.
And it is a lesson. All right. We're going to do this, and then we're going to try to, there's got to be somebody, maybe Dave Plyer is listening. He'll bring us in some spicy chicken sandwiches. I don't know from where. He's coming in to do Steve Cochran's show in an hour. I don't, maybe, So it's Dave's the kind of guy, he might have bought like a case of these Popeyes and Chick-fil-A sandwiches, and they're in his freezer.
That man is an eventful man. What do you see on Facebook? That guy is going everywhere.
He's always doing
everywhere.
He does a lot of stuff. He's a popular man.
Come on, Dave. Take me with.
Or just bring Sammy a sandwich. He's been here for 15
hours. Chicken
sandwich,
we'll call it even.
All right, there you go. Let's do this. Then it's news time, WGN.
I've never dunked an Oreo in milk. How dare you?
What? That's the best part. Are you kidding me?
Absolutely not. Is there anything on the package of Oreos that said dunk this in milk? Is there anything that says that's part of it? Like any instructions? You guys are all kinds.
That is American, sir.
It's a bright idea to dunk it or to crunch it.
The Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, on the other side of the news, school starts for Chicago Public Schools on Tuesday. Everybody focuses on the good. You know me, we got to focus on the not so good. A time when a teacher scarred you for life. Bad teacher experiences. We'll talk about them on the other side of the news. There we go. That's what we need. Crank it up. Brian Noonan in for Nick D, 720 WGN. Nick will be back tomorrow. He, of course, is off for Labor Day. Happy Labor Day if you have the day off, if you are getting up to go to work, or if you are still working, we're with you. We appreciate your labor. Keeping an eye on the hurricane as Dorian takes aim at the continental U.S., the eastern seaboard. We will be watching that as the day goes on. They're issuing now, I'm just seeing, more evacuation warnings for South Carolina as well. So good luck, everybody in the path of that. All right, school starts at CPS on Tuesday. I know a lot of districts have been in school for a week and a half already. We all always focus on the new year and how everything's going to be great this year. And, you know, hope springs eternal. I was always one of those kids. I don't know how you did, Sam. Every year I thought, man, this is going to be my year. Everything's good. Look at these new notebooks. I got brand new crayons, a backpack. I got my school shoes on. I'm ready to rock. Things are going to be good. 2 weeks later, I'm like, I hate this place. I'm never coming back. Oh, my God. Oh.
Yeah, I was an A-plus student in lunch.
Oh, lunch. Good.
Yeah, A-plus. Yeah.
And gym, probably. You were a wrestler, so you probably did good in P.E.
Yep.
As we go. Can't call it gym now. P.E.
Oh, yeah.
Physical education. I think because gym teachers got upset because they felt
negative
they were
3 points for you.
Well, they figured they weren't getting respected. But I think a gym teacher is, you know, worthy of as much respect as any other teacher. But now PE.
What subject most did you like going to school for?
English.
You had to have English.
English and, language. English and reading, those kind of things. When it came to math, I was horrible.
Terrible.
Social studies history was okay. Here's the thing. I was one of these guys who, if I had a dollar for every time a teacher told me or my parents that I wasn't living up to my potential, I'd have been retired and have lived up to, by the time I was 15, I would have lived up to my potential because I would have been rich, rich, rich beyond my wildest dreams. So that was, it wasn't that I did, I liked school enough. I just didn't like doing homework. That was it. I liked going to school. I was a good kid. I listened. I didn't cause a lot of trouble. Got a little trouble, like everybody. But it was the homework part. There was always something else to do, you know.
Yep, I was the exact opposite as you.
Really?
It took me to about...
So you liked homework?
No. Mm-hmm. I was a bad kid, didn't do my homework. I was the class clown, making everyone laugh.
Really?
You can't see that in me? By senior year, that's when I finally started getting myself together and saying, listen, you got to do something. Come on.
And look where you ended up, working 72 straight hours here at WGN, sleeping with a bull's neck pillow on a couch that God only knows what's going on that couch. That's been here a long time. Hopefully you put down some sort of barrier.
And I'm signing off.
Really? Oh, your face was right on it? Is that why you bring the neck pillow?
I got the neck pillow. Lean up and lean against it.
Oh, boy. It's
a good neck pillow. It's trendy.
No, it's, I'm
on.
Not I'm not making...
Don't hate the neck pillow.
I'm hating the fact that you had to lay on one of those couches.
Please don't remind me.
All right. Listen, if you have any sort of... skin irritation or mysterious bumps, make sure you get to a medical professional immediately.
Couch or mail room, take your pick.
Well, the mailroom, exactly. The mailroom has that nursing chair.
Exactly.
So if you were lactating, you could go in there. That's our lactation station, which was a band name.
I chose couch.
Yeah. You went for the couch?
I went for the couch.
I don't know, man. I would sleep. With the neck pillow, I would have gone for the big recliner chair.
Nah, I'm a little scared in there.
Really? Well, it's more claustrophobic.
Exactly.
You know, what do you think? The pens are going to come to life? What are you afraid of?
I once
was attacked by a ream of copy paper, and I've never gotten over it. And mailbox slots just make me very nervous, like somebody's going to come out of them.
Sounds about right.
All right. I don't know what would scare you. Did you ever have a teacher do something that scarred you for life? 312-981-7200. That's what we're talking about. Because I was thinking about this, because I don't know if you know this, Sam. I substitute teach. When I'm not here, and I teach little kids, pre-K to fifth grade. I don't go into middle school because I got a lot of attitude.
Like but, me.
Right.
There you go.
I can't imagine you being like as bad. And I forget what puberty is like because, but it's kids that you see at 8 in the morning who are lovely. When you see them at 2:30, they want to stab you in the throat. And it's like, wait, we hung out for, you know, first period. You were great. What changed? I'm just pubescent. You know, puberty changed me. That's why I was a rational human being at 8 o'clock this morning.
Like chicken sandwich, now, was it like
yeah,
Popeyes?
I didn't get a good chicken sandwich. I found out my parents leave the thermostat fan on auto. It was awful. My whole day is ruined, and now you're the last hurdle between school and freedom. And I would just as soon kill you as listen to you talk to me for 15 minutes. That's all. I'm done with you. So I teach the little kids. But the point is, you have to be very careful when you're teaching. And back when I was in school, it was different. Teachers would do whatever they wanted. And you could get away with saying things that maybe you didn't say. And I was thinking about this because the other day, I was in first grade. I was subbing for the art teacher, actually. And I'm not an artist. But I was, first graders came in for their art class, and we were doing, some sort of free drawing, whatever. And I made sure I kept telling these kids how good their drawings were. Even though, let's be honest, most of them were not. And as a parent, you know that feeling because your children will work on art projects forever. And they'll come home, and they'll be very excited, and they'll hand them to you, and you look at them, and you go, boy, if you weren't my kid, I'd probably have you institutionalized, because what is this drawing supposed to be? A horse? No, the horse is not taller than the house. This doesn't make any sense. But you can't say that. As a parent, you don't say it, because you'll crush your child. And as a teacher, you're not supposed to say that kind of thing, because you'll kill a kid's creativity. They'll never want to come to art class again. They'll never want to draw again. They'll never want to sing again, whatever. So I told all these kids that they were like Picasso. They're, oh man, this is beautiful. I love it. That's all I kept saying. I don't even ask it. Here's a trick. If a little kid shows you art, never say what you think it is. Always go, that's fantastic. What is this? And then they'll tell you what it is. And in your mind, you go, not a chance. But out loud, you go, that's beautiful. That's the most beautiful, whatever it is that you just made. I love it. And I started, as I'm telling these kids these lies, I started thinking back to things that teachers have said to me in the past that now I haven't been in kindergarten, let's say 20 years. And then we laugh and we go, oh, why don't we triple that? No, I still remember Mrs. Barron was my kindergarten teacher. And I can talk about her now because she has to be dead because I think she was 106 when I was in kindergarten. God rest her soul.
She's 126 now.
Maybe. If she is and she's listening, well, you're on my list. All right?
You made the list.
She made the list because here's the thing. Now, I'm an older man. I'm advanced, but I still remember this in kindergarten. We had... You get these sheets, alphabet sheets, when you're learning to write your letters. And on top of the sheet, there's a picture with something that starts with that letter. So we're working on the letter M. So what do you think's at the top of this page, Sam? I'm going to give you a little quiz. I'm going to see how insightful you are. We're working on M. What's a word that's something that starts with an M?
Magic.
No. How about, well, that's a picture of magic for a kindergarten kid. Monkey, Sam.
Monkey.
Think kindergarten. Monkey, all right?
Monkey.
Monkey. So if the house is in the distance, the horse may appear larger. You don't know the artist's intentions. I'm pretty sure I know the kindergarten kid's intentions, but I get your point. If the artist. So anyway, I draw my M's, I do my printing, and then at the top, I draw the monkey. And I vividly remember this. I colored the monkey black with a yellow face. I've said I'm not a good artist. I also obviously don't know what monkeys look like. But I colored the monkey black with a yellow face. And being a kindergartner who has other things to worry about than the constraints that the man puts on my creative freedom of coloring, I colored outside the lines. Act of rebellion or pure laziness or lack of artistic ability. You can pick whichever one. I'll go with I was fighting the power. So I didn't scribble, but there was some outside the line. I was probably in a hurry thinking, this is dumb, coloring a monkey. It's almost nap time, and then I got some graham crackers with my name on them. I got things to do. So coloring a monkey is way down on my bucket list of, hey, let's figure it out. Anyway, Mrs. Barron collects all the papers. Then she gives them back, and we're going to take them home. Across the top of my paper, and Sam, as God is my witness, this is a true story. Across the top of my paper, in red pen, she wrote, poor. Now, again, I haven't been in kindergarten in a long, long time. But I still remember this vividly. And I take it home to my parents, who were both educators. My mom was a teacher at that point. My dad was a principal. They used to hang, I have four brothers, they would hang our artwork all over the kitchen. It looked like the worst art gallery in the history of art galleries. This was like, if you decided to do an anti-art gallery, that was our kitchen. Welcome. But to their credit, they hung it all up.
Welcome to the Noonans.
Yeah, it was great. It was nice. They hung up our work. I thought, man, you know, little kindergarten me is like, this is not going to be good. You know, poor, I don't know much, but I know poor is not, hey, this is fantastic. I take it home, and to their credit, my mom and dad both went, well, she shouldn't have written that on your paper. Try to stay in the lines. And you know what they did? They hung up that piece of art. They hung up that paper in the kitchen. I swear to God, they hung it up. And so they made it a little better, but I'll never forget that. Never. So I don't know if you have one of these stories that you would like to share, a teacher that you want to call to the carpet. I have a couple more. Of course I do. My life, I've been put upon my entire life. So think if you have one of these, Sam. We'll get to that. First, we got to do the weather because, you know, everybody wants to know the weather. Today is Labor Day. Areas of low clouds and fog early. Temperatures will start up in the upper 50s in the outlying areas to mid-60s downtown. They will rise over the day to a low, the low 80s inland, low 70s along the beaches. Tonight, isolated late day evening thunderstorms may pop up. Most areas will stay dry. For Tuesday, first day of school for CPS, temperatures reach the upper 80s. Oh, it's going to be hot. Scattered thunderstorms develop in the afternoon and early evening, especially from the city north. Some could be severe. And on Wednesday, it's going to cool off and we're going to feel like it's fall. The sun will. Did you write this? Or did you just print it?
Printed and chopped it up.
Printed and chopped it.
Printed and chopped it.
All right. Well, it says here sun is going to dominate the day.
Dominate.
Could get a little cloudy in the midday. Upper 60s, low 70s. If you want to know what it's going to be like Thursday, just pay attention on Wednesday and know it's going to be the same that day. Right now, 61 at O'Hare, 63 at Midway, 65 along the lake. We'll have
a bunch of fragments there.
Some more things.
To school.
More things that teachers have said that scarred your life. We'll do it after this on WGN. Brian Noonan on 720 WGN, here for Nick. Nick will be back tomorrow. Dave Plyer coming up at 5 o'clock. You are flailing like a maniac. Is everything all right?
Yeah, your board is locked, so I can't control
nothing. How is my board locked? I don't know what that means.
I couldn't control
I have no
nothing.
Idea what that means.
I was out of control there. So
I see. Man, you're losing your mind.
I am.
We're talking about the beginning of school and how sometimes teachers say things that stick with kids. You know, And I know, listen, I love teachers, and I know a lot of them say really inspiring things, very positive things that stay with their students for the rest of their lives, which is what we hope, you know, what we hope for. But sometimes teachers say things or do things, and they may not even know that these little comments stick with kids. And I, you know, now people post stuff on Facebook all the time or on the internet. If a teacher does something out of bounds a little bit. You know, there was a story a little while ago about a teacher who wrote pathetic on some kid's paper, almost like my poor from Mrs. Barron on my coloring page. But, you know, now teachers can be publicly shamed, which I don't think is the right thing to do. If something like that happens, you just go talk to the teacher. But you forget. So it's, you know, as the teachers are enjoying, for some, their last day of summer vacation or just starting another year, you got to be careful. Because you don't, listen, here's what you don't want. You don't want in 30 years a guy like me railing about something that happened to him in kindergarten. One, because it shows that I really need to get over stuff. Two, you don't want to be that teacher. You don't want to be the one getting called out, like Mrs. Connor, my second grade teacher, who took my pack of football cards and never gave them back to me. They weren't even out on the desk, Sammy. They were in a folder. I knew you don't take football cards out in school, you know? So we're there, second grade, we're about to do some cursive writing. I don't know why all my bad things happened during writing, but I was about to get something out of my folder, and she walked by, and she sees my stack of football cards with the rubber band around them, jammed in my folder, and she took them.
Oh,
never got
no.
them back. Why do I still remember that? Because she owes me like $350.
Yeah.
And of course, she's dead. I'm not going to collect. I don't know where she's at.
See, the difference is, like, you probably didn't say nothing, and then me...
Of course I didn't say anything.
I would have said something.
In second grade, you would have said something?
I wasn't the brightest person growing up.
You seem like a kid who'd be a little mouthy, I gotta be honest.
I was a little mouthy.
That's not about intelligence, it just seems like your character. Like, you'd go, hey, where are my football cards?
Exactly, and that's kind of leads me to my story. Like, yeah. I had one teacher named Mr. Cortina, and that's the one teacher that always got to me. Just, no matter what the situation was, he could put me in my place. And finally, I was on my last strike of, like, just, I was gonna get kicked out of school. I mean, I was stealing the teacher's
Is this high school or grade
this
school?
This is, like, middle school. A little in the high school, like,
oh my god,
yeah. So he was my middle school counselor, then he ended up moving to the high school, so he followed me. Couldn't get rid of, couldn't shake him off, so he was still following me. But I was on my last strike, and like, finally he finally broke me. He's like, you know, you have a lot of people that influence you, and you people feed off you, why not use that into a positive energy? Wow. Start using it to a negative energy. And from there, I just kind of took off and ran with it. And now,
see, but that's an inspiring story.
It is, and now I work around the Chicagoland area with nonprofit organizations, helping them build money and repetition for their stuff. So, I mean, it just shows you that, I mean, you could grow up and be, like, the most meanest kid. Because I'll tell you, I was not the brightest kid of them all. But after years and years of frustration, I turned it into a positive.
I would like to see you as a second-grade Sammy. I think that would be troublesome. I think, you know, you'd be a handful. As we say, as the teacher said, you'd be a challenge.
I was a challenge.
A challenge.
A challenge and a half.
That's not good.
It's not good.
But it's good that you had somebody who inspired you. I had a few teachers like that too, you know, who made a difference. So that's I always give them credit. But now I felt like sometimes you got to call out the ones. People need a reminder that what you say to kids, they don't always forget. You know, you think, oh, they're little, they're not paying attention, they'll forget. You know, not if they're like me, not if they're psychotic. And they're going to hold on to this ball. Maybe it's that ball of fury. Maybe it's the you know, four letters written in red ink when I was in kindergarten has shaped me into the, just the, you know, miserable cuss that I've become. Maybe that's the key. Maybe if we could go back in time. People always talk about going back and, you know, killing baby Hitler. If they could go back in time. Maybe we go back, and before Mrs. Barron writes that on my paper, she takes a second, and she goes, just okay. Okay would have been fine. You're not you know, that could have changed the whole course of my my life.
Nope. Poor.
No, poor. 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 Your effort is poor. Your artistic endeavor, everything is poor.
There'll never be anything, Martino.
Nothing. Yeah, see? How's it feel?
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. All right. I'm giving myself a headache. It's late. It's going to be 4:30. That means I think it's still Don in the news. I should know it's still Don because there's nobody in the seat. So in about a minute, he'll come running back over there. After the news, we got to talk about... All right, I got to ask a question. This is silly, but it's a holiday.
Fire away.
It's a question. We'll talk about dwindling sports, but we also have to talk about activities if you're renting an Airbnb or someone's house. I saw this near Abby, and I laughed for a number of reasons. So we will talk about that. It's a what would you do and how do you respond when you're staying at someone else, basically staying in someone else's house.
Well, I got a good one.
And this is and I will say that this is a couple that is I think they said 75. So it's fun. Very fun. All right, let's do this, then we'll do that, and then we'll start looking to the Sam, your 312-hour nonstop radio marathon is almost over.
Yeah, but there's a problem to that is because I didn't want to drive here, so I took the train, and the next train out is 8:20, so I'm stuck here.
Oh, my God.
I'm stuck here. Too.
Where do you live that you had to take a train that only runs once every, you know, millennia?
Yeah, I'm from Woodridge. So
you got to go to, oh, no.
Yeah, it's not that far, but I didn't want to leave my car here for over 30-something hours, and then... Oh. You know, that parking fee is not too good here in Chicago.
No. I mean, they at least in the building, they always round it up. You get to 12 hours, but, not enough for you today.
Nope.
That's insane.
No,
that's just wrong. We got to talk to management.
No, that's cool. I like it.
I'm sure you do.
At least you didn't put me to sleep.
Well, it gave you an excuse to bring that fashionable neck pillow into the office.
It's trendy. What
that's
can I say?
That's very nice. I wish I had one now. Listen, I'm all for anything that's trendy.
Anytime.
Look at me. I'm nothing if not trendy.
Hey,
I'm
no
probably
beard?
The trendiest. No, the beard's been gone for a while.
I know that.
The beard left after Mardi Gras. But I think it's coming back for Mardi Gras because I loved how it looked when I dyed it half green and half purple in New Orleans.
I got no beard. I got something else.
You got a... Yeah, I noticed the mustache. I noticed that. How's that porn career going? All right? Everything working out?
It's going pretty good.
Good for you. Yeah, it must be. You're supporting it with this. Nice side hustle. Thanks, Don. Have a good morning. Good seeing you. Now, was this your last cast, Don, or are you still here for the 5?
I'm here until 6 a.m.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk to you at 5.
Party.
Yeah. No, oh, yeah, because it's the hot. So the newsroom is on holiday schedule, too. We got a lot of different shifts.
Yeah, much labor.
All right. Well, keep laboring. You're doing a hell of a job.
Thank you.
Don't labor too hard. I'm only laboring for about 24 more minutes. Then Dave Flyer will pick up his hammer and sickle and labor until 9 o'clock. He's in for Steve Cochran today. I saw this in Dear Abby, and I laughed and laughed. It says, my wife and I are retired and fortunate to travel throughout the year. We prefer to stay in homes either through a home exchange or home rental by owner. So we've all stayed at, maybe you haven't, most of us have stayed at VRBOs or we've Airbnbs or what have you. We've all stayed at hotels. The question from this guy is, he said, well, to put it mildly, his wife gets randy when they're in a new location. And so she tries to initiate things, and he does not feel comfortable doing it in someone else's bed because he feels that he is disrespecting that person's home. And so he asked Abby if it was disrespectful because his wife claims it's the same as a hotel room. And I just thought, huh, that's an interesting conundrum. I would have never, because you never think, or I never do, I never question it if you're at a hotel, right? And basically, that's a bed that God only knows. A hotel bed is the equivalent of Sam sleeping on the couch in the back of this studio. A lot has gone on those beds. And yet, we don't have any trouble, you know, doing that. Have you ever stayed in an Airbnb, Sam? You're very busy. I don't know what he's doing back there. You working hard? All right, I was talking to you. That's okay. Don't worry about it. I like staying in Airbnbs, but I'm uncomfortable a little bit because unless you can tell it's just a place that somebody rents all the time. But I've stayed in a couple where you can tell the people live there part of the time, and then they're just renting it out at certain times. And then it's a little freaky. But my answer to these people would be, yeah, go ahead. Do it up. Have some fun. Why not? Do Do you disagree? I don't. I like that retired, you know, they're retired and the wife is still, you know, still getting all randy. But one of the reasons I get nervous around these Airbnbs is because I'm very tall. And so a lot of people have these footboards on their beds, making their beds very short, which bothers me. We seem to be, is there a technical problem that I need to be aware of?
There's
Sam,
no,
is something
problem
going on? It's a beehive of activity in there. We've got a beehive of activity with our fine engineering staff. Bob Ferguson running in here, slamming things on my board. I don't know what's happening. I'm very nervous. I don't know what's going on.
You nervous?
I like to know what's going on. I see a lot of concerned looks, and we're still on the air, aren't we?
We are.
Are we on the air? All right. Listen.
We do it live.
Did you? Yeah, sure, Casey. Or O'Reilly. We're going to do it live. Did you ever stay at an Airbnb or a VRBO?
I did in March, actually.
Oh,
this
yeah?
This was in Tampa, Florida.
How was that?
Oh, my gosh. A
lot of palmetto bugs?
My girlfriend at the time booked it.
Oh, at the time.
At the time.
Oh, boy.
Booked it, and that was probably the biggest regret ever, because we show up, and she did good. It's this big mansion, you know.
Really?
$1 million mansion.
Wait a minute.
Just hold on. I got to get
all
to
right
the thing.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, it's good. So we show up. It's a big mansion, pool. You know, it looks amazing.
For two of you?
For two of us.
All right.
So first things first, I'm like, all right, let's meet the guy. Guy's nowhere to be found. She's like, come in, you know, just make yourself
the landlord
home
guy you're talking
landlord
about.
Yeah. And he never showed himself. Okay, and then the second thing is, there's a bunch of random people coming in and out of the house, just like, I don't know who they are. And honestly, the house looked like a cartel house. Like, it looked one of those.
Really?
If you look up from the pool, it has one of those, like, stripper things, you know, where the strippers dance in the
a pole or a cage?
No, it's like, you know, where the DJ booth is, and they got, like, the glass.
I don't hang out the places you hang out, Sam.
Okay, what if it? Short story short, it looked like a cartel house, and
okay,
random people are coming in and out of the house. I didn't meet the owner for 2 days. And
so
we're staying at this guy's house.
Had you rented just a room?
It was a room, but like we had access to the kitchen and like the downstairs floor, but you couldn't go upstairs. And this guy would not like present himself. I would text him, he wouldn't respond. We're not presenting.
That's himself. Too weird.
And that's what I say. It was.
But
so
you were
weird
able to get in there, right?
We were able to get in there. And it was a big, big house, but the guy would not show himself. It took two days to see this
was
guy.
Was he living there?
He was there the whole time. He has people,
really?
People coming in and out of
was
the
he
house
watching? Did you look around your room? Because that's a big thing now. Cameras in these VRBOs or Airbnbs. People are putting cameras in these bedrooms to spy on it.
So one thing I did take was a safety class, so you could fill like the walls or something. So
where'd you take a safety class?
I took it with my former wrestling coach. He's a safety major and stuff. So he showed me like ways.
That's a major?
He's a major. Yeah, it's safety.
Listen. Don't look at me like you're a career counselor and I'm some
I had no career
imbecile. I had never heard of safety as a major.
Yeah, so like,
look both ways before you cross the street. Here's
yeah,
your bachelor's degree.
Stuff like, you know, if you're walking with your wife or something, where do you stand? Like, do you know where you stand?
Yeah, next to the street.
Next to the street, behind, while she's in front to the front right. Safety. So then you have an advantage. If someone comes forward, you can run forward, but then you also have the backside.
Well, what if I don't want to be looking at my wife's backside? That seems rude.
The whole point is if someone came up.
What if I walk next to her? You know, so I'm not supposed to walk next to her?
You can, but if you want to do safety purposes,
wow,
you're supposed to be standing to the right.
You can. If you don't love your wife and want her to get murdered, you could walk right
exactly
next to her.
These are little safety.
How far back? Should I set her like a block ahead?
No, just a couple feet.
So I could surveil her?
Just a couple feet in front of you to
couple
the left.
Feet.
So then you have your whole guard. It's all about protection schemes.
All right. So this is a major.
This is a major.
At college? At a college?
I'm not
at, like an accredited
listen,
university?
I'm a TV and radio degree, so I have.
No, I've just never heard of it. Okay.
It like
so you're
class.
you take this safety class.
Yes.
And what do they teach you when you go into a house? What are you supposed to do? What were you doing?
Just
how did you put this? How did you put this into
just
a
check,
practice?
Check belongings, like you know, like you said, cameras, or like there's a wall, like you could feel the wall, you could feel if something's in the wall, or just little stupid stuff, booby traps and stuff, like the little stuff.
I know you said it was a cartel, looking like a cartel house, but do you think there were booby traps? Or you think there was a tripwire?
Brian, if I...
What, are you in the jungle?
I'm
going to
show you this house, and you're going to be like, wow, it's a nice house. But then if you look inside and just the way it was walking around and stuff, you would not believe how sketchy this house
is. So how did you check for booby traps?
I just looked around, did my hardcore search. What are you looking at? Open cabinets, look through, you know, storage areas and stuff. Wow. Stuff, and, you know.
If it so you're like you're a nosy Nelly is what you are.
Of course. I mean, I'm going to do anything to protect myself to make sure I'm not in some weird place.
You were staying at a cartel house. You were
it
staying
felt
at,
like that,
You were
yeah.
staying at Scarface's house, and you're worried about, I'm going to check for booby traps.
I mean, I don't know. There's people coming in and out of the house.
That's
and
weird.
They don't say hi, and maybe, some of them didn't even know English. So it's just
no,
like,
that's weird. I would not want to stay in a place like that where there's free-flowing traffic. I've never stayed in one where the landlord or the owner was actually living there. I've stayed in numerous ones, but there was never anybody around. Usually the owner comes and meets you and gives you the keys or tells you the code on the door or whatever, and then skedaddles. I've never had them, like, I would never do that. I would never just rent a room in somebody's house while they're there. That's, I'll rent the whole house, you know, because that's how I roll.
Oh.
But
blame the girlfriend at the time.
Yeah, is that why you broke up?
Maybe.
But the question becomes: Did you feel weird about using the bed?
I mean, the whole time I felt weird.
That's true. You all right? That's an odd situation. We can't. You're not a good baseline for this. Plus, your safety class puts the whole thing in question.
You've never like done anything like safety related, like,
I guess,
arts or anything like to protect yourself or just safety precaution, like any of that?
I mean, I figure I could, you know, unless somebody comes at me with a gun, I, you know,
basic 101. If someone grabs your wrist, what do?
You twist away.
Yeah. Out.
Yeah.
And grab his wrist.
Right.
There we go. Okay.
Well, listen, Kung Fu. I got you.
I got you.
I've been in a couple scraps, Sammy. I've been around. I'm not, you know, I haven't always been the jovial radio host you see sitting before you. I've, you know, done some things. I can take care of myself.
I'm sure you
I've
can.
Lived this long, you know, and quite frankly, this is good enough.
It is.
So if somebody booby traps my hotel room and I don't see it, I had a good run.
Listen, I was frightened, you know, for my life.
If I'm in a Ramada Inn and I get taken out by a tripwire, well, you know, really.
It's just like, you know, you have to be the strong person, but deep down you're showing a little fear and you can't give, you know. I couldn't give my girlfriend at the time.
No, the girlfriend at the time. I love that you keep saying at the time.
Yeah.
At the time.
I got to call it how it is, right?
Right. No, listen, you're a guy who trades up. Trades up or down. I don't know. Maybe you traded in.
Upgrade.
Did you upgrade? Good for you. Always got to upgrade. Nobody buys an old car. No. You know, you buy a better car. You always got to be better.
Almost the beginning of 2019. Now we're at the end of 2019. So.
Well, we're only about three quarters of the way through 2019.
Yeah, we're still close to the end.
Close enough to the end for you?
Yeah.
Past the halfway mark, you call it?
Yeah, I think you have a weather report to read.
Yeah, it's right in my hand. Well, I can't really read it because it's just a series of hieroglyphics and craziness.
It's fragments broken down, and you can word it how you want to word it.
All right. Listen, all I really need is the numbers. You know what it's going to be today, folks? It's going to start out cloudy. It's going to be in the 50s. It's going to get up to the low 80s. 70s along the beaches. Tonight, it's going to get maybe a thunderstorm. Who knows? It may pop up. Most areas are not going to see any. Don't worry about it. Tomorrow, temperatures are going to get into the upper 80s. Scattered thunderstorms may develop in the afternoon or evening north of the city. Some could be severe. Wednesday, gorgeous if you like fall weather, because it's going to only get up to the upper 60s, low 70s. Thursday, because it was so nice on Wednesday, we're just going to do it again. 61 right now at O'Hare, 63 at Midway, 65 along the lake. We'll talk a little bit about some surprising numbers in high school sports as we get ready to say a goodbye and say hello to Dave Plyer. He's coming in at 5 o'clock. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the program. Dave Plyer coming your way on the other side of the news. Thank you, Sammy. Try to, you know, get some rest. Go home. This is not a place to stay, even with a cool neck pillow. All right? It's Chicago Stories, told 24-7 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Associated Bank. It is 5 o'clock. Here's Don Kleppen.